You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Okay, Maggie, look. Let me break it down to you how it's going to happen. They're going to come through that door and be good cop, bad cop. Don't fall for that, all right? That's why I ate their food. So they put the plate of donuts out here to test your guilt. If you don't touch it, you're guilty. I ate the whole plate. The whole plate. Okay? It's me and you. They walk through that door, you don't say nothing.
She's the one you want. All right, I was just sitting at home watching cartoons, playing video games with my cousin, and she came in there.
Glenn, all right? You're free.
Hey, I am not going to jail for you or anybody else. I have done nothing bad my entire life. Hey, man, I'm still a virgin. Okay, so what? I downloaded a couple of thousand songs off the internet. Who has it? Who has it?
Glenn, shut up.
No, you shut up. Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me, criminal.
Oh, Sugar Rush.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 138 for the 2nd of July, 2011. And as I said in our Geek Actually show for our American listeners, happy 4th of July coming up in a couple of days. I am Dave McVeigh. I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I am all right.
Really? That's the extent of it. Yeah.
No, that was kind of the point. It was like I kind of said, hi, I'm all right, and then realized I wasn't actually talking into anything. So.
No, your mic is like miles away from
yep.
you.
All right. Okay, we got that fixed. That's sorted. Hi, David. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful.
Yeah. We can go around in this circle. This is like an infinite loop. We can do... We're also joined by a very special guest.
Ah, forget that guy.
The return of Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Stop it. Let's move on.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of the Geek Action Network. And this week we're going to review the Michael Bay sequel, Transformers Dark of the Moon. Plus we're going to do a little bit of film news. And
you know
it says here, including the new trailer for Captain America. I didn't cut and paste this properly.
I know we're going to do this constantly throughout this entire episode because there's a lot of things that will be mind-breaking in this. But when the fuck was it Dark of the Moon? Was that really what title was the whole time?
Did they get why? Dark
I swear
of the moon.
It was Dark Side
was,
of the Moon.
No, just Dark of the Moon. That's
then
what it's
what
called.
The fuck
who the hell
does that mean?
Because they're not actually allowed to say Dark Side of the Moon because there's no such thing as the Dark Side of the Moon. In fact, I was actually... There's a site online called badastronomy.com.
How about just badgrammar.com?
I looked up badastronomy.com. I actually had to look it up because of your review.
Yeah.
Because when you said the Dark Side of the Moon, but how can that be a Dark Side of the Moon when the moon actually rotates?
Yeah.
And my first thought was... That's a very good question. Does the moon actually rotate? And so I went and looked it up, and I found out that, yes, indeed, the moon does rotate.
I know.
But it rotates once every 30 days. It's a very, very slow rotation.
I know.
And I found out that according to NASA,
yeah.
they never actually say dark side of the moon. It doesn't. They say the near side and far side
yeah,
of the moon.
No, that's
it.
It's wonderful, and that's all fine, Dave, but you understand what I meant in my review when I'm sort of sitting there going... How can you have a dark side of a moon that spins every 30 days? It's like, it's not like you'd be able to miss a giant fucking ship on that. We will come back to this,
yes,
though.
Yeah, we will come back to that in the review.
I am holding my tongue.
Transformers Dark of the Moon has some problems, and we will come back to its issues in a minute. Now, I will say that the film news does not include the new trailer from Captain America, because that was last week. It actually includes the new trailer for Mission Impossible, and all week I've had problems with this, or actually the last few days I've had problems with it, because I keep saying Ghost Recon. It's Ghost Protocol. Ghost Recon is a computer game. So it's a Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. We're going to look at that trailer coming up. We've also got a little bit of news about the new Ridley Scott Prometheus project.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very bits of news. We'll come to those. And we're also going to a new list of five. Now, our list of five this week, Richard actually suggested that we should do another list, which I decided that we should actually honor our listener instead, because we actually last week had one of our listeners write in and say he would like us to do a list of five investigative films,
Mm-hmm.
Which are films. Sorry?
It's a good list.
It's a good list. It's a films, whether it's a journalist, a nurse, a doctor, a cop, whatever. The idea of having to dig the facts and come to a conclusion. So we thought, that's a good list. We'll do that. And I'm still not convinced that my list is the best it could be. There are so many films in this particular field that you
see.
It's
a genre, you know.
Yeah, and so I'm fascinated to see what your guys' lists are going to be as well, because I'm sure there's films that I'm going to go, oh, damn it, I should have thought of that. Anyway, we'll come back to that. First of all, let's start the show as we always do with a little bit of feedback and what we've been watching. And I'm hoping that Richard will give us a little bit of a rundown of the Sydney Film Festival.
I can do that.
Not a huge one, because we don't have all the time in the world, but we would like to hear some of the highlights from the Sydney Film Festival.
So you don't want to hear about all 35 for this?
No, I don't think we need to hear. Or about your mental breakdown that you had in the middle of it all. But we will.
Look, only three people were killed.
Very quickly, though, let's just go through some feedback here and say that Bianca, who also gave us some feedback during the Geek Show, says, hey, David and Josh, yet another feedback from me. Keep them coming. We love the feedbacks. Hope you don't mind. Never. I understand both your opinions of Kung Fu Panda, but I will most side with liking this one more than the first one. So, Josh, you've got a fan, okay?
Yes.
Says yes.
One
fan. One in the world. One person at a time.
Says yes, the first one was hilarious and established characters and all, but this one had so much more. First off, the opening sequence was gorgeous. The puppet theater style animation along with the traditional animated flashbacks really added something more for me. The action sequences were more elaborate in this one. There really was more kung fu. One topic I don't think you brought up was the use of camera. I noticed in the battle sequences that most of them were one shots or had very few cuts. Very unconventional for an action sequence, or maybe very good use of camera work. It's actually very common in traditional Chinese kung fu films.
It's
so
true.
It's try and keep the action as wide and as flowing as possible. I noticed it a lot in computer animated films that the camera is very often static and they are filming filming live action. Very few animated films realize that they can do whatever the hell they want to with their camera, but somehow don't. No, actually, that's a sign of good restraint as a filmmaker, where you sit there and say, yes, we can do anything with the camera, but if we try and make it like a traditional film, it's more accepting to the audience rather than just fly the camera anywhere you want to. come back to that.
We will come back. I know it's difficult to hold it in.
I try, but I can't.
I think this one really did a good job. As for the humor, it was subtle but good. Nothing too overwhelming to make it distasteful, but Jack Black sometimes has a habit of this, but he was toned down. And she puts a quote here, "Scars don't heal, wounds heal." Yeah, you're right. I guess they kind of fade away. I'll just add in my little giddy of a debut film directed... she was a little giddy because it was a debut film directed by a female. Okay, nice. So very good. One last note. I'm a huge fan of Lady Gaga, and I thought this parody is hilarious. We played the Weird Al parody last week. I find this clever parodying. She is clearly copying Madonna very often, but yet fans still go crazy over her. Does this make any sense, or does it reflect upon the insanity of our society? No, it's our society is insane. Yeah, fair enough. Bianca sent us a second one, much shorter this time, and says, hey, forgot to mention, this is in the previous email, only remember when I press send. Okay, please look into Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I'm reading the book right now, and apparently it's being made into a movie being produced by Tim Burton and should come out later this year or next year. Ridiculous title, but if done right, a really good movie. Now, we have covered that a lot on this show. Last reports were it was Timur, how do you pronounce his name? The wanted guy?
Beckman Batov.
That's the one. And Tim Burton were producing it. From what I read recently, I think Tim Burton may actually have pulled out.
Thank Christ, it has a chance of surviving.
and I think they're still searching for a director at this point. So there's been a lot of talk about that and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and both films seem to be having trouble getting off the ground. So hopefully we will see more on that as it comes. And I agree with you. I think it could be a really funny film. So it could be a really good film. Tristan wrote to us as well very quickly and says, was just listening to your podcast and heard you talking about Game of Thrones. It says, my wife and I have just finished watching the whole first season. Now, I found it hard to get into at first, which Josh has also had trouble with. It says, the first episode caught me with the forest scenes and the mutilated people and got me wondering what happened. Then after that, the show kind of lost me for a bit. It took so long to tell the story and found it hard to keep track of all the different things happening. Mm. It wasn't until about the fourth episode that I could get into it a lot better. Mm-hmm. I got a better grasp of what was happening, and by the last episode, it was at the point where I am now hanging out for the next season. It hasn't really started until about the eighth episode. Another show we have watched is Camelot. After hearing you talk about it, we watched that too. Basically, Tristan says he thinks they're both fantastic shows, and his wife is hooked. Mm. Now, she says, Josh, I can see how you haven't gotten into Game of Thrones. It is just one of those shows you have to stick with. Mm. It is very slow at getting better, getting started, but it gets better. And when it does, hopefully the second season isn't a disappointment. You can see that they've made a massive effort into making this visually appealing and keeping it as authentic as possible. Mm. Just had to add my thoughts when I heard you guys talking about it.
I'm not sure whether I've made this clear enough. I have no problem with watching Game of Thrones, and I plan to. But as a reviewer, I struggle from one thing, which is that if too many people like something, I am going in without a clear mindset on them. Because I have this pre-established love by people that I like and people that I trust film-wise that enjoyed something. So I am kind of required to enjoy it or just hate it. And I can't just watch it for what it is. So I will watch Game of Thrones, but I probably will put it off until probably about a month before the second season comes out, because that way there's no need for me to think any particular way. I can take it for what I see in the actual
series. So if I do a Game of Thrones special, you don't want to be part of it.
Again, it's one of those things, Dave. I don't want to be that guy that comes on and goes, well, these are all the problems with it when everybody else loves it. But that's what I'm essentially going to try and do. If everyone likes it, because it's like it's just the nature of
you couldn't of, well, you look at it and go, wow, I see what people like.
It was like me with Justin Bieber's first record.
You know what, dude, that's an unfair thing to say. Like, I've got to say, man, that like realistically we all get that. You get a movie that comes along and it's like if you watch it during the hype fest, you can get caught up in the hype, and if you do it straight away, it's unabashed. If you watch it from episode one and watch through it with everyone else, you're getting your opinion. If you watch it later on, you're influenced by other people's thinking.
You need to start with it from the beginning, like we did, to take the journey. Unfortunately, you didn't. But
I do run, you know, three websites and all this sort of stuff. Sometimes TV misses me because it's a lot of time. It's like films I can do because it's like
because
one.
We don't do anything.
Right? No, I'm
not. No, he's right. We don't.
Can I add that games take something like 40 to 60 hours?
That's
sometimes.
True. You do games, so, which is a pain in the ass. So I will give you
I have
that.
No time for games.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want to have time.
And that's right. The thing. TV is not my forefront.
But it's so warm and loving.
Yeah.
And comfortable. Okay. James from Melbourne says, don't believe the hype.
Yeah.
Flavor Flav.
There you go. Yeah. So, James, did you like Game of Thrones? All right, let's hear about it. What's the Sydney Film Festival got going?
Oh, it's got some films in it.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
A couple of things happening. Movies.
All right, I think
there was a screen, and they have this thing that flickers pictures. Right,
shall I focus you a little bit and say there's two films in particular I think everybody is interested in?
Okay,
which would be Hannah.
Okay, there's Hannah
and Tree of Life.
Tree of Life. Okay, look. Yeah. I did, on the site, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week or so ago, we did our top fives for the festival. I ended up seeing about 35 films over the course of 12 days, which is a marathon. David alluded to my small mental breakdown on the second weekend when I was attempting to do 5 films in one day. I made it through 2. So I did skip a couple of my original plans. It would have been much closer to 40 had I... I stuck to my original schedule, but I did see a lot of films and I saw a lot of good films. Now, the first one that you spoke about, Hannah, was the opening night film, and Ms. Kate Blanchett, the festival matron, was in the house for that. And look, I tell you what, it's a hell of an action film, but it's a beautiful action film too. This is coming from a director whose previous films have been Atonement and Pride and Prejudice. Mm. So he's got a very beautiful camera.
It's a really different film for
him. It's a very different film for him, but he's got this very beautiful view of looking at it. And the opening shot of Hannah is probably one of the most beautiful, crisp, pristine things you will ever see. And it's just there. And then it becomes this really... balls out action film after that, and it's and it's, you know, look, you're talking Eric Banner, you're talking Cate Blanchett wearing this hilarious red hairstyle, which has to be seen to be believed. And I'm going to horribly mispronounce her name. The girl that played
Susie
Salmon.
I have no idea how to pronounce
it. Yeah, she was Susie Salmon in
in Lovely Bones.
Lovely Bones. She's Hannah. And
Sorsay, is that it?
Sorsay. It's a Celtic name, so I'm probably mispronouncing it no matter what I do. But you know, it's just a magnificent, beautiful, and different action film. Mm. Probably one of the most different action films you'll see this year.
I'm very much looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, me too. Ever since I started seeing the promos, and then I heard a review on it, I think it was on Slash Filmcast, where they actually said that it basically is just a fairy tale.
Mm. Yeah,
and it's structured
exactly
like a fairy tale in the whole bit. And it's like, I'm just fascinated by this film. I'm fascinated by everything about this movie.
No James from Melbourne, not Hannah Montana. before we're talking about different action films, before I move on to The Tree of Life, because I think that deserves to be talked about last, 13 Assassins was one of the other films that I saw there. This is Takeshi Miike's second most recent film. He's got a new one coming out. This movie, I don't know another way of saying batshit crazy. It is everything you want in a samurai film. It's like, you know, people who've been wanting Takeshi Miike to do a samurai film for years now, this is the film they've been wanting to see. It starts off innocently enough. You got a bit of sword and a lot of Japanese honor happening. Mm. And then it's all building up to this 45-minute battle sequence at the end. And this is basically, it's kind of like the Seven Samurai in a way. It's a group of, 13 assassins facing off against...
Funny that.
Yeah, funny that. Facing off against the hordes. And it's the bloodbath you want it to be. It's absolutely mental. It starts with minor spoiler. It starts with flaming cattle.
All right. I haven't seen Flaming Cattle since Mars Attacks.
And it just builds up from there. And there's a giant explosion. I don't know how they got that many explosives in that period of history. I don't care. It is
you're not
absolutely
supposed to think
awesome.
That hard in a movie
no,
like that.
And no. You don't have to think for the last hour of this film. It is that good.
Great.
Quickly before I mention The Tree of Life, I'm going to mention one other film I love, Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Right.
This is the take on the spam in a cabin genre we've been wanting to see for years. This is a Canadian film that's been sitting on the shelf, most people's shelves, for about 2 years. 18 months, I think it's been sitting on the shelf. It came out in 2009 originally. Hasn't got a release by anyone yet. It should. If it doesn't even get a DVD release here, there's no justice. It hasn't even been released on DVD in the States.
Oh.
It's got Alan Tudyk. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Tudyk.
He's one of the hillbillies in this film. It's the reversal of the... of your typical spam in a cabin films, where a group of college kids go into the woods and hillbillies hunt down and kill them all off one by one. In this one, they get there and they instantly assume that the hillbillies are out to get them, so they treat them with suspicion. And the hillbillies, who are completely socially inept, don't really help their situation by laughing in uncomfortable situations. So when one of their number accidentally falls off a rock and the hillbillies take her in, they think that she's been kidnapped and all the kids go after them, but in hilarious ways accidentally kill themselves off one by one. Oh. And it all gets blamed on the hillbillies. It's one of the best uses of a wood chipper since Fargo.
All right.
It's brilliant. I can't say enough good things about it. You have to see this film. And
wonderful.
Even if you have to do bad things to see this film, see it.
I don't know what that means, but I'm just going to
we'll let that one slide.
It is out there. It's been playing at a lot of festivals, and I think it might be playing at Melbourne International Film Festival at the end of the year, but it hopefully will get a release because it's getting a bit of attention now thanks to the festival circuit. Now, Tree of Life, which is actually in cinemas this week in Australia.
Oh, is it really? Cool.
Yeah, so it came out 30th of June, I think, which was yesterday. Oh, no, two days ago. It is... Look, I got no point of reference for this film. Terrence Malick, who film-savvy listeners will know, has only directed four films in his...
Many years.
In 40 years, I think.
I was about to say, his first film was in the 70s. It was Badlands.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So, and he took 20 years off between Days of Heaven and The Thin Red Line, two magnificent films. But with The Tree of Life, he attempts to tell... It's hard to explain this film, but he attempts to tell the origins of the universe, but within the context of a family in the 50s. I am not doing this film justice in any way, shape or form. It is one of the most beautiful, mind-blowing things you're going to see. It goes for, I think, well over 2.5 hours, but you'll just be completely
transfixed. It's a really polarizing film, though, because the critics have been really... It's a love-hate relationship. There's not a lot of middle ground on this. Mm. People have basically said that it's a masterpiece, one of the greatest films ever made, and the other half of the camps basically sit there and say this is the most... piece of masturbatory cinema ever made.
And you know what the beautiful thing is? They're both right. It's an absolute wank, but it's a beautiful wank. You know? It's the sort of film that you can sit there and just be completely mind-fucked by and then walk out of it and think, what the hell did I just watch? I want to go see it again.
Yeah,
wow. Digital Angel says, doesn't it have Kirsten Dunst? That's Melancholia.
That's Melancholia. That's the film that Lars von Trier did no favours for. In fact, a lot of them have been... one thing I did see during the festival before we move on was it was 25-year anniversary of David and Margaret, Margaret Pomerantz and David Stratton on the air on Australian television, and they spoke candidly about the five films they've disagreed upon over the years. They gave an early preview of their reviews for The Tree of Life and Melancholia, which one hated and the other loved in both cases.
Let me guess, Margaret loved them.
Margaret loved one of them and hated the other. They both... David Stratton's not a big fan of Lars von Trier. Margaret thought it was a bit rich, and David Stratton throwing the word pretentious around. But anyway...
Nothing's changed.
But look, you know,
David, I'm just being a dick.
James from Melbourne in our chat room. For those who don't know, we go out live and we have a chat room. You can join us, geekactually.com/live, every Saturday. James from Melbourne in our chat room has said, it's a beautiful wank. There's a DVD cover review.
He gives it five beautiful wanks. it was a great festival. It was really...
it's the second part of that phrase that I think we need to bring up. Where he says, Transformers 3, he gives an average nonchalant get the job done wank.
That's great.
I think that's brilliant.
Oh, dear. Someone on Twitter this week said to me that they thought that they're going to go into Transformers 3 fist pumping.
Mm.
And I said, I think there was far too much mutual fist pumping during the production of Transformers.
Oh, dear. So the bottom line is, you think Tree of Life is one that we need to go see?
Look, I think everyone needs to see this. Whether you hate it or love it, it is a film like no other. And if that doesn't get on the poster, people...
This is a film that he took 6 years to edit.
Yeah.
Mm.
But his next film's coming out next year. He's already in post-production for another film. So.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, he seems to be accelerating a little bit in his old age.
Yeah.
His films were like 10, 20 years apart.
He had 20 years in the wilderness. Chances are he wrote a few scripts. Apparently the script for Tree of Life was originally a script called Q, which he basically wanted to do the origin of the universe. And then that, over the course of 20 years, that morphed into something else.
Right. Well, as things would over 20 years.
Yeah, and I think there was originally Vietnam War elements in there and all sorts of things. But the studios didn't want Q in the 70s, so that's one of the reasons why he quit film for two decades.
There you go.
All right, so I think we're gonna have to see Tree of Life. I think we may have to do it on the show.
Yeah, dude, I'm with you. I think that's.
I think we may have to do this. I saw the posters for Tree of Life. I saw Terrence Malick's name, and I got to tell you, for me, it's a film that I want to see, but it really feels like homework. I'm going to have to really be in a position where you go, I'm ready. I have to be really ready to see this, you know? And there's been a few films like this where you sit and go, it feels like homework, but sometimes you just have to sit down and do it.
Sometimes you got
to
do it.
You know?
And see it on the best screen possible if you're going to see it.
So you're talking event cinema or something like that.
If it's playing there,
It won't be.
No.
All right, well, on that note, let's move into this feature review, speaking of event cinema.
Oh, Jesus.
I'd say this week...
hold on.
Everybody take a drink.
Do we have shots? That's Red Bull. It's not Red Bull.
All right, Transformers Dark of the Moon, directed by Michael Bay and written by Aaron Kruger. Star Shia LaBeouf, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, Josh Duhamel. How do you pronounce his last name? Anybody know?
Duhamel.
John Turturro, Tyrese Gibson, Patrick Dempsey, Francis McDormand, John Malkovich, Alan Tudyk. Speaking of Alan Tudyk, Kevin Dunn, Julie White, and Ken Jeong. It also has the voice talents. We should really not forget the voice talents of Peter Cullen, Hugo Weaving, and Leonard Nimoy. There are many other
just
voice
small
talents.
Name people.
Yeah, just
small name people.
And Peter Cullen in particular. I mean, the man has been doing Transformers. He's been doing the voice of Optimus Prime now for what, 20 years, 25 That's, years?
Oh, 60 years coming up on.
Yeah, so he's been doing it for a while. All right, the big robots are back. Sam is trying to find his place in life while a mysterious Autobot ship that has been lost for many years, I think.
Hidden on the dark side of the moon.
Hidden on the dark side of the moon.
Just hold on to that one for
I said
a while.
Found on the far side of the moon.
Work out, Dark Saeed.
The contents of the ship sparks off the final conflict between the Autobots and evil Decepticons, a conflict that threatens the entire world and all of mankind, and I wrote that myself this time.
Yay.
The reason why
you
I
did a better job than Aaron Kruger.
Well, the reason why I had to... Well, I summed it up a lot shorter than he could sum it up. All right. The reason why I had to write my the reason I had to write my own this time was because all of the synopses I found online were either one sentence and didn't say anything, or weren't the story at all. And you're still going, what the hell? Nobody knows how to market this film. Not surprising. All right. Here's the trailer for Transformers: Dark of the Moon, and we will come back and talk about this.
Our entire space race of the 1960s was in response to an event.
If you breathe a word of what you've seen here, we'll do time for treason.
Everything humans know of our planet, we were told, had been shared. You lied to us. You've made a grave mistake.
When they took over the planet.
You'll be fine, I promise.
It's over. I'm sorry, but it's over.
Faith in us, but never in yourselves. From here, the fight will be your own.
Wasn't that exciting?
What was exciting? What happened?
Did we just see a trailer?
We just saw a trailer. Sorry, we were actually busy chatting about something else. Look, I've seen this movie. I don't feel like I'm going to be rushing out to see it again somehow. All right, who wants to start us off here?
Do we have to?
Somebody has to start us off.
You guys are going to be the negative Nancys on this shit, so I'm going to get this out of the way to start with.
All right, good for you.
Because I'm just going to play A, devil's advocate, and B, I may as well be the guy that stands in the middle.
Well,
okay.
You're in the middle. So.
Exactly. I'm in the perfect position. All right. This film is trash. Absolute trash.
That doesn't sound like the middle.
No. However, I knew it was going to be trash. Number one, because I've been watching Michael Bay films since I was like 10 years old. And it hasn't changed in any way the way he made films back then to how he makes films now. He's just getting more and more creative with how to make large-scale toy sets and smash them into each other. That's essentially what he does. Then adds explosions and chicks with jackal clothing or tight-fitting wear. So I kind of knew that that was going to happen, and I tried my best to switch off that part of myself because I originally got into the concept of watching this film even after seeing number two based on one thing, which was giant robots. And look, I'm a nerd. I'm a nerd. I know this. And I knew that when I went into this, I knew what I was going to expect out of this. I was like, I know that I'm going to get giant robots, and I know that I'm going to get a shitload of other stuff that will suck ass. And I went in and I went, I know this is all going to happen. And I got exactly what I expected, but I got like an hour and a half worth of solid Transformer on Transformer action, like serious explosions and death-defying feats and real bits where people actually jumped out the back of planes and flew down through cityscapes. This was incredible. And you know what? You can hate this film as much as you want, but realistically, if you take out that hour and a half, which is very difficult to do, and you just try and take it for that, there is enough enjoyment in this film to say that I enjoyed it a shitload more than Transformers 2. I'm done. Go.
All right, I'm going to start off because, you know, they always say you should give an upstroke with a downstroke. So I'm going to start off by saying I've got a copy of Transformers 1 here on DVD that I'm going to give away to our audience to remind people that Transformers 1 was actually a decent film. Yeah. And you should watch this rather than watch Transformers 3. Once again, if you are familiar with this show at all, you'll know that this is a pre-owned, loved copy. Yeah. It's in perfect condition. It's very nice. We give away pre-owned copies because I picked it up on Blu-ray, so I no longer need this. Mm-hmm. And we're giving this away. It's tested. It works. It's in good condition. All you have to do is send your entry to feedback@filmactually.com. And in 25 words, tell us, I don't know.
Tell us all the reasons that you love number two.
Oh, God. All right, so 25 words or less. Tell
Come
us
on,
why.
That's difficult. We yeah, may as well make
yeah.
it.
Tell us why you like number two.
It reminded you never to do
and
X thing.
I don't
ever
believe
again.
People that say that they didn't like number two because it made $800 million at the box office.
Exactly.
So everybody
there
saw
has
it.
To be someone
everybody
out there
had to
that
have
enjoyed
had repeated
too.
Viewings on this
Michael
film.
Bay saw it. 200 million times.
feedback@filmactually.com, 25 words or less, why you liked part two. Remember, our decision is final and it's only open to Australians because it's a region 4 disc, one, and B, we're cheap and don't send overseas.
That's
probably the main reason. Okay, now with that out of the way, I hated Transformers 3. And,
David, tell us why.
And I'm going to tell you why I hated I think Transformers 3, sorry Josh, with all due respect, I think Transformers 3 is as bad as part two. And the reason why I think it's as bad as part two is, and I will put an upstroke on this in a minute, so just bear with me, because there is something I do actually like about part three. The problem I have with Transformers is that I didn't buy, like, or care about any of the humans in this film in any way, shape, or form. I didn't think it was funny. It disconnected me completely, and I actually got bored. The movie is actually 2 hours, 45 minutes long, and I disagree with you. I think you could easily shave an hour, hour and a half out of this film. No problem.
I actually never said that.
You said that would be difficult to do. I think you meant that wouldn't be difficult to do.
No, as in, it's difficult to disattach yourself from the film. I never said you could shave out everything that wasn't action. That's like right. I said in the review, Dave, honest to God, if you could make this film without talking or without humans, it would be amazing.
It would be an amazing visual spectacle. Absolutely.
I think it would just be like one of his Victoria's Secret catalogs.
Yeah, and that's my upstroke to it, is that there is absolutely nothing wrong at all with anything that ILM did in this film or his camera crew. Or the film looks amazing. The 3D is amazing. The Transformer robots are staggering. If this doesn't win the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects, there is no justice in the world. I mean, it's just an amazing looking film. There's no doubt. Yeah. But the film is completely hollow and without substance. And the problem I have with any sort of action film like this is if you don't care about the people who are in peril, you don't care about the action. It's just visual spectacle. And there's no attachment. There's no connection to this. Michael Bay used to make films where you cared. His films have never been masterpieces, but you actually did care what happened to the bad boys in Bad Boys. You did care about what happened to the astronauts in Armageddon. You know, you did care about Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage in The Rock. You don't care about these characters. And the funny thing is, you actually cared about Shia LaBeouf and his band of people in the first Transformers. There was a sense of that in there. There was humor. There was a definite sense of peril in the first film. And that sense of peril has been removed because now it's just about giant robots hitting each other, which looks fantastic. There's no doubt about that. But it's just hollow. And to make the film almost 3 hours long is just, it's just sinful. You know, he sit there and go, why is this film so long? Yes, there's more action in it than Transformers 2. That's because the running time is longer. You know, you just have to fill more in. Richard, hit me with it. What do you got?
Well, where do I start? Michael Bay is a bit like an ADHD child with a $200 million toy box.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. He keeps pulling out toys and playing with them for 5 minutes and then thinks, no, I'm bored with that. I'm going to go somewhere else now. Hmm. One of the really frustrating things about this movie, and I wasn't fond of either of the first two films. I liked the first one okay, and the second one was just a pile of crap. But I kind of wanted to see this because part of me really wants a giant robot film to work because I'm holding out for the days when, you know, we get Gundam and Macross and all those kind of films will make it onto. As long as Michael Bay doesn't make, you know, we've got the technology; they can build it better. But the thing is, it starts off really well.
Sorry, $6 million fan.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it starts off really well, and I'm going to say, look, the first 5-6 minutes of this film are actually visually spectacular. This is when they're on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, the 20-minute preview that we got to see was that whole 5 or 6 minutes. So I'd seen that whole opening sequence, and I went, "That's great."
Yeah, look, out of context, that would be fantastic because it's actually a really impressive special effects. And so, as you've already said, David, it's the special effects are unsurpassed. I don't think I've seen special effects or 3D use this well
since Avatar.
Yeah. I'm not the world's biggest Avatar fan, but you got the camera crew from Avatar on there, and that part of it's impressive. After that, it gains momentum, but so does anything else that goes downhill. You know, it's
a point.
it is mind-blowingly action-packed after that. If that's all you want, then this is your movie. But there is absolutely nothing else that you can say. Ooh, I've just dropped my headphones. There's absolutely nothing else that you can. That's how angry I am. There's nothing else going for this film.
I don't know. We may have to contain him. I've never seen him this
Whoa! Calm down, man.
Well, much like Michael Bay, I think I'm hopped up on sugar and red cordial. I mean, he's just bouncing off the walls for this thing. It's like, let's put a wingsuit scene in there. You know, it's cool, wingsuits. Let's have a wingsuit scene.
Well, if you watched that documentary that we've got the clip on our site, and I think you've got it on yours as well, where he actually says, the producer says, Michael Bay saw a documentary on these guys in wingsuits and called them and said, we have to have these in the movie.
Yeah, but that's exactly what the movie's like.
Not in the script, just had to have them.
Every time something starts that's cool in that movie, he cuts away from it and goes on to something else that's possibly cool. And a minor spoiler here, there's a showdown between two of the major characters in the film. They both pull out these giant sword things and they're about to get into it. That fight is over, I swear, in 20 seconds flat. And then they've moved on to something else. That's the moment that the whole thing's been building on to, that giant robot on robot battle, and it's over quicker than it started. Then we cut back to what is one of the most hilarious scenes in the film, and unintentionally hilarious, which is our best friend, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, standing amidst the rubble, hair blowing in the breeze as explosions go all around her. And you realize, what has she been doing for the last 40 minutes of this film?
Dressed in pristine white and not a mark on her.
Standing there in heels, by the way.
I was kind of expecting at some stage for Michael Bay just to run out in the background and start pulling the fingers at me. Like, it was just like, hey, look, I've got lots of money and I can do whatever I want.
And the opening shot of her. Yeah. So after the first 6 minutes, which is actually quite impressive, as we said, and then we cut to Witwicky in his house. And the opening shot of this film is her underwear clad bottom walking up the stairs, and you just sit there, and it looks exactly like his Victoria's Secret commercial. And you go, I think he's been doing that once too often. I read actually somebody wrote a comment, I think it was on Facebook or on Twitter, who basically said, all right, I think it's about time that Michael Bay just bites the bullet and makes a porn film.
That was Dave. Dave said it.
$200 million porn film.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're hitting. He's hitting there, and maybe one day we'll get that. But, like, I mean, this is the whole thing for me. I knew that this was coming. I was ready for the punishment because I was like, I'm not going to give this film a good review. It was never going to get a good review from me because I know Michael Bay too well, and I knew this was coming. My plan was just to try and shut off everything so that I didn't cause myself brain damage, because that's actually what you have to do with this film. You have to basically stop every time something just starts to get overwhelming and just drop it, because if you don't, you just end up in a giant sea of rage and blood pouring out your ears, because you're just like, wait, what? Dark side of the moon? How is there a fucking dark side of a planet that spins?
We look at the moon
all the
time.
That doesn't even make sense. Let's just forget it.
You know what hurts me the most, though?
What?
The lies, Michael.
It's so true.
Mr. Bay, you told us that this would be better than number two, and you lied.
Shia LaBeouf said this would be better than number two.
They lied. All said it.
No, look, and I'm sorry, but I reckon they got it right. I'm still sticking to my original thing. There was more action in this than the last one, and that was the only problem I had with the last one, was that nothing quelled the
pain.
That
was the only problem you had with the second one?
Nothing quelled the pain of the rest of the movie. It's like, if I had just got enough action, I'd be like, I'm never watching that thing again. But the action was really cool, but I didn't even enjoy the action in two because there was nothing happening. Enemies were behind trees and they're running through a forest, and I'm like, I can't even see a robot. They're supposed to be these giant robots and they're playing freaking hide and seek behind trees. I got no idea what's happening. The few action scenes that actually happen are so goddamn close that nothing is able to be seen.
Yeah, and
you
also
see an arm and a leg and a couple of sparks, and you're like, are we fighting or are they trying to connect together?
Remember in the second one that we've also got all this going on with the fact that we also don't understand the story.
Exactly.
Nobody understands the story.
This is my thing. Story in the second one.
No. And this is my problem. It's like, if I'm comparing 2 to 3, I'm sorry, but 3 is a superior movie, because at least by the end of it, I was like, look, that was a shit story, but at least it kind of had a beginning, middle, and an end. Like, I mean, that in one thing is a step above 2, because you're just sitting there going, it's shit.
What a compliment to the writer. Well, at least you were able to make a beginning of your
Exactly. Look, I mean, high school kids can get it right, so you must be able to. I mean, I know you were probably working with crap, being the fact that you were working with a Tourette's-bound fucking kid like Michael Bay. Like, he's just running around like, fucking, let's just chuck this in. And you're like, I just don't know how to write that into the story, okay, but okay.
Zed in our chat room has said, all right, wait for a second. Before anybody comments, we actually talked about this on Geek, actually, and Zed may not have been here. Said there is a dark side of the moon that doesn't get sunlight. Is the only part of the movie Michael Bay got correct. Actually, he didn't, because we looked it up. The moon actually does rotate, and there is no true dark
every
side of the moon.
Every
30 days, it actually does a full rotation as it goes around. It looks like it doesn't rotate because it's a trick of the eye, because it's only rotating very slowly. But it does actually
rotate. Yes, the whole thing rotates.
Go to a site called badastronomy.com. Yeah. And it will actually help you with some of these problems. But yes, it actually does rotate. Oh, and Zed says, yeah, knew that, Dave. Okay, well, why did you say it then?
I think maybe sarcasm doesn't translate.
I said serious.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just following his tags, man.
And this is what I'm saying. It's like the writer's got a bad rap. I mean, no one should have to work with Michael Bay, because Michael Bay has just got to the point where there's too much power. You have no power as a writer when you're working with Michael Bay. Michael Bay is going to throw in shit you just can't write into a storyline.
You just have to keep up.
Exactly. And that's all this dude's doing. So I'm not going to pinhole him into being the worst writer of all time. But I am going to say, this one got a beginning, middle, and an end. It's almost like he sat down and went, I'm going to write these 3 points now. Because at least that way, by the time Michael Bay's finished, I'll still have a finished film.
We're going to invite Jorge from the Spotlight Report onto the show now. So if he can call in and give us his opinion. We saw this with a few other blog sites.
Yeah.
Also, David Longo from Damn Good Cup was supposed to join us. So if he's around, he should call too. And we'll see if we can get all these people on. And we're also basically going to say at this point that the Skype line is open. So once we've finished with Jorge and his opinions, we do invite you guys to call in. It's 028011 3167, I believe, is the number. I've lost my sheet. There it is.
Yeah,
3167, or our Skype ID is geek, actually, all one word. So you guys are welcome to call. Let Jorge from Spotlight Report talk to us first, though. Jorge, please call at some point. Call.
But yeah, no, so this is what I'm saying. No, in my opinion, the only reason that I can say 3 is better than 2, and they are both rubbish films. Rubbish films. The only reason that I'm putting 3 above 2 is it has a beginning, a middle, and an end in some form. It's not very well put together, but it's got some form of that, and 3 times the action of the original of number 2.
I think that's what it was, bullet points.
Tick, tick, and then you look at number 2, which has a tick list of nothing.
Okay, here we go. Jorge, are you there?
Hi, dude. How are you?
Hey, how are you, dude?
Hey.
Sorry, Josh.
Enjoying your
phones on.
You
can hear really loud. It's all good.
Yeah, but if you do that, you're losing mics. So what did you think of it?
First of all, Josh, I don't know which ending, you see, because I didn't see any ending of the film.
Like, there was a resolution. Thing got killed and they saved the town from whatever thing that they were trying.
The two previous films has like a speech of Optimus Prime, like opening the door for a new something. Something's going to happen. We are here. We're waiting. In this one, it's like Bumblebee singing the wedding song and throwing rings and final joke.
You see, I blocked that bit out.
Wedding rings.
Seriously, I had so many expectations about this film. I was like, this is the film I want to see.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I saw the trailers and I saw my inner kid, let's say, yes, that is G1. That's when I see Ace Optimus with the trailer. And at the end of the day, I saw 2 hours and a half of jokes and 50 minutes watch for my inner kids. It's like, seriously, why so many unnecessary characters? Why John Malkovich, who reject to participate on Spider-Man 1, saying that he doesn't want to be a joke in a film of cartoons?
Are you kidding, man? This was a serious role for him, man. He took this 100%. I just can't say it with a straight face.
I don't know, man. I feel like Michael Bay asked you all about how to write this movie. Seriously.
I feel like Michael Bay has basically just slapped me across the face. I really do.
Yeah.
You know,
because I actually, I'm in the minority at this table, which is I actually really enjoyed the first one. I was a very surprise. I really enjoyed it. I thought it worked for me.
You're not in a minority. I thought the first one was good.
No. So just in general, I think I liked it the most. Right, I think I liked it the most out of this table. Yeah. And I really was so disappointed by the second one. And then when they all apologized and said, yeah, we made mistakes, and then they said there was a writer's strike, and they gave all the excuses in the world and said that the third one will be better. My hope was we would get back to the first one. And they it was like Michael Bay said, suck you in, slap.
You're the guy that believes his ex-girlfriend when she says she's changed, man. No, this this was not going to happen. This was awful from moment go.
The scariest part of all this, Jorge, of course, is that the film is probably going to make $1 billion at the box office.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we all die slightly inside.
Something.
Well, the one thing I will say, the one thing that I live in hope with is the fact that Michael Bay and Shia LaBeouf have both said that this was their last Transformers film. As far as they're concerned, they've finished. Now, you know that Spielberg's production company is going to want to make more because these things make a lot of money. But the good news is that Part 4 will have a new creative team behind it. That could be in its favor.
Yeah.
You know, we might actually get back to what this could be.
Terrence Malick.
Tree of Bolts. Oh dear. Anyway, so if they made a 4 without Michael Bay, would you go back, Jorge?
I probably, with Michael Bay, I will be doing my hope on the queue, waiting to see it again, saying, this is going to be the one, this is going to be the one, and again, I'm going to go out crying again, and I don't know.
The first one
for me was a big blast. I loved the first one, despite in all the jokes, despite in John Turturro, despite in all the American flag around Coca-Cola thing in the world. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on then later. Like, why they insist with John Turturro with the jokes? As I said after the screening, for me, John Turturro is like the Jar Jar Binks of this trio.
That's so true.
We've got a comment in our chat room that basically says, turns out Megan Fox is smarter than she looks.
I know.
That's actually, we just clarify that Megan Fox was actually fired. She didn't resign. Spielberg took offense. Yeah. Spielberg took offense to her calling Michael Bay Hitler. And Spielberg himself fired her.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But I will say one thing about Megan Fox, I didn't think it was possible that there would a movie would come along that would actually make me miss her. Mm. You know?
There was that sly dig at the start of the film towards her. Oh yeah, she wasn't very nice.
I have to respect Jorge though on this, man, because like, dude, it gives me a lot of inner hope to my own child that you would go back for another one, because it's like after watching that, I'm like, I don't think I could ever step into a cinema again about robots, like giant robots.
Steel.
Yeah, but that's different. Like, that's, yeah, no.
I have the hope with Macross that Tobey Maguire wants to produce, and Evangelion. I have big hopes, and I would love to see Gundam as well.
Oh,
but
dude, yes.
Let me mention something you say, guys. You say that ILM and all the effects were amazing, but it's one point that I should say, what's happening with the art direction in this film? How an art director come to Michael Bay and say, look, this is Wheeljack. We're going to put white hair on Wheeljack, eyes like Einstein, a mustache, and you say, oh, this is Wheeljack. It's one of the most important characters on the Transformers story. And they ruin it with a bad design. Then they kill him. And furthermore, he gave Shia LaBeouf like a crawl or something to kill Starscream. Like, so frustrating, yeah, that you can never see an Autobot kill a Decepticon in the entire film until the end. Because the humans are always killing everything.
I think it's fair to say that Michael Bay has absolutely no respect for the lore of Transformers. That goes all the way back to the first one, where he didn't actually want to use Peter Cullen as Optimus Prime. He'd actually cast somebody else to do the voice, and it was fan outrage that finally got Peter Cullen to come in and do Optimus Prime.
This one, he put the trailer and the axe and that's it. Okay, fans, I put two things for the cartoons and nothing else.
Also, another thing, Michael Bay hated the Transformer sound, and he didn't want the Transformer sound. Thank you very much, Richard. He, once again, fan outrage said that he had to use it, so he finally put it back in as a background sound in the first movie, and of course, everybody loved it, and he realized he was wrong, but that's the thing. I don't think he has any care for the lore of any of this.
Yeah, I don't think he understands the concept of lore. He wants to play the game his way, and that's all that he's interested in. This is Michael Bay. We all know who he is.
Yeah, agreed. Anyway. All right, we've
One more thing to finish. Sorry.
Go for it.
A big offense for me, and it was the biggest offense. First, two things on the film that I was almost walking away. Megatron has flies.
Flies
on Megatron. It was like a Libra or sick guy hidden. The Autobots were fighting against the terrorists in Qatar or something.
Yeah.
And the marvelous quote of Victoria's Secret girl going to Megatron and say that he's a bitch, the Sentinel's Prime speech. And that is why Megatron joins the battle. Not because it was a big battle. It's not that scene.
Because she took down his manhood.
That's right.
She took on his manhood, and that was enough. That's terrible.
And he doesn't even kill her. He doesn't even smash her.
I know, right? Were you not waiting for that moment where he just turned around and just copped her with one backhand and that was it?
At least mussed up her perfect clothing and hair, you know?
No, but you know what? That would have solidified the sexist nature of this film if he had have taken her out, because it would have been like, yeah, and it's all right to beat up women as well.
Yeah. I actually went and looked at Michael Bay's filmography last night. I was just curious. His first directorial gig was actually Playboy Playmate Calendar.
Nice. Well, there you go. Man has not gone very far with that.
He hasn't really stretched too far, has he? Anyway, I think that there are better Michael Bay films, believe it or not, but this is not one of them.
Yeah, no, definitely not. So, Jorge, just absolute rubbish, wouldn't suggest it to anyone?
I would suggest it for the 3D experience. I think the 3D was perfect. I would love to suggest people say watch the trailers and don't watch the film. Keep the trailers. That I will do for me. Yep. But seriously, I always say that you have to be your own critic, and the best thing to do is go to the cinema and see yourself. So doesn't matter what we say, people have to go and watch it. Probably they're gonna make millions, they're gonna buy the toys, and Michael Bay is gonna be full of money. And we'll be crying here, but doesn't matter. At the end of the day, cinema, and that is the cinema experience. Some people like, some people doesn't, and that's it pretty much.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Thanks, man.
Jorge, before you go, tell people where they can find you.
SpotlightReport.net is my site. It's about entertainment, and we are against gossip, so we never put gossip on that. So please join us and whatever. Leave your comments.
I've actually been having a look at your site. It's pretty cool.
Thank you, man. Except for the background of Transformers that I put, I want to delete it, but I can now.
Yeah, get rid of that.
Hey. One more thing. Listen to this. Can you listen to this?
Yes. Autobot, transform, and roll out.
That is the quote I wanted to hear in the whole freaking movie, and he never say it. Like, he said only on the first one once. Seriously. That is my toy, by the way.
Yes, I knew that was... I know that sound. I know that sound personally because I had one of those. Seriously, you just touched my heart, man. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna let you go, Jorge. Okay, we're going to move on with the show. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay. See ya. Bye.
Man, that was awesome.
That's cool.
That's so good.
All right. So let's just wrap this puppy up and say, I'm going to go first. I'm going to say, would we recommend it to friends? And I'm going to say, no.
You have to do it in slow motion.
No. No, I wouldn't recommend it. I say, look, if you are fascinated to see the special effects and stuff like that, watch it on Blu-ray. You can fast forward through all the junk then. Josh?
If you don't like me or my reviews, go see it, because you're obviously the kind of person that would usually like this kind of thing. But at the same time, I will say there is enough badass action that if someone offers to pay for a ticket, it might be worth the trip.
Fair enough.
Which is like,
We at The Real Bits are offering a bounty on Michael Bay, dead or alive, preferably dead.
Preferably dead. Wow. There you go. That is strong. So there's support.
No, actually, I would go back and see a fourth one only because it can only get better from here.
That's what they said about the third one. I don't believe you.
Or if it gets worse, I want to see the train wreck.
No, exactly. It's become like Twilight for me.
But let's face it, when Transformers 4 comes out, we'll all be sitting there with our army of geeks, and we'll all be watching it, and we'll all have the same conversation in a couple of years' time.
Exactly. And it'll be fun because we'll all get to just water cooler that
Absolutely.
Shit. And that's what we're here for.
Okay. We shake that off?
I'm done.
I wish I could be done with it.
All right, let's move past.
Cleansing.
Yes.
It will make more money than Super 8, says James from Melbourne. And that is the sad truth. That is such a sad truth. James from Melbourne would like to point out that the lead star of Transformers, her lips would have absorbed all of Megatron's bullets. All right, let's move out. Transformers news over. I will say that in our entertainment news section, the second story is actually coming back to Michael Bay. So remind me about that, okay? Mm. But the first story, we have to say very quickly, very sad note. Peter Falk dies at age 83. For those who don't know who Peter Falk is, like my son, who basically said, who's that? Peter Falk was Detective Columbo.
I adore that man. I mean, even going to the seeing his role in the last time I saw him was in the original City of Angels, the German one. Help me here. Help me.
Oh, God. I love
it. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Wings of Desire.
Exactly. And in Wings of Desire, he plays Columbo, which I just thought, well, he doesn't necessarily, but everybody keeps commenting.
It's that same character. It's a character.
And he's just like, hey, isn't that Columbo? And you're just like, ah, that's great and awesome. And that was the last time I saw him. And that was the first memory I had when I found out that he was dead. And I was like, oh. I like that guy.
Yeah, no, I like him a lot. He's been playing Columbo since 1968.
Wow.
So it's a long, long-standing character. Mm. Interesting to note that the Columbo pilot episode, which I have never been able to find, and I have been looking for it desperately for years, is actually directed by Steven Spielberg.
Wow.
It was one of his first directing gigs.
Oh, wow.
So if you ever come across the original pilot to Columbo, the not the first movies in 68, the pilot to the TV series, was in 1971 or something like that, that's what we're looking for.
Wow.
So Spielberg, there's a few things that Spielberg directed early on. He directed a made-for-TV movie called Something Evil, which I've been looking for years and I haven't been able to find. He directed one of the pilot episodes with Joan Crawford of Night Gallery, the Rod Serling series. He directed a pilot of Columbo. So these are things I'm looking for. If anybody ever comes across those, get in touch with me. He died at age 83. He'd been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and he will be missed. Very, very sad. My wife is a huge Columbo fan. So, all right. Now, moving on from one tragedy to the next, Michael Bay has announced his next film, which I'm actually very curious about. I got to tell you, I'm curious. He's actually said that his next film is going to be a small $20 million black comedy called, if my show notes ever load here, it's apparently something he talked about a while ago and then kind of disappeared on, and now he's come back, called Pain and Gain.
Right.
And apparently it's a Pulp Fiction-esque type picture, black comedy, and he wants to work on it. And he actually said that this was going to be his next film, I think it was after Transformers, and then got roped into the sequels of all the Transformer films and has never come back to it. But now apparently, yes, he's going to go do a little low-budget film, which quite frankly, I think it's the best thing he could do.
Absolutely.
He needs to realign himself, and working on something small budget would probably be good for him.
Because if you think about his career trajectory, he started with a Bruckheimer film. And then he made two more Bruckheimer films, and then he made Transformers films. And it's like you sit there and go, this man has never actually been able to make small films. And one of the things that you really work on your craft on working on character and story and depth is to work on small films, you know, and maybe he kind of skipped that part in his training, you know. So I think maybe going back and doing some small stuff might be a good thing.
Probably
at this point.
Would.
And I will say, if he does make a $20 million small film, I will actually go see that.
But given his problems with directing actors, you know, would this work if he doesn't have a $200 million toy box to play? Does he know how to do?
Well, no, and that's
going to be the interesting situation. I mean, your actors aren't being paid as much. You don't have as big a budget. You're not working. He's not working so far away from the project either. Like, when you're working on a lower budget project, you're involved with everything.
That's
like, in this, he's just going, I want a scene where they fly
he's
down with cameras, and he just goes like that and then disappears and reviews the footage afterwards. It's like, with this, he has to be so connected with the actors and so on and so forth that, look, I mean, if nothing else, this movie may suck, but it might point him in the right direction.
That's it. I'm looking at his I'm looking at his filmography now, and apart from the Playboy stuff at the start there, something like Bad Boys, when the first one came out, and there were few expectations around that. I mean, Will Smith was coming up as a big star. I can't remember. I don't think he had
been. He was a TV star.
He was a TV star at that point. There weren't a huge amount. Martin Lawrence, you know, hadn't done all of his fat suit comedies at that point. Yep. You know, it's a fun film.
And you know what's really interesting about it? Bad Boys has got the same issues that this $20 million, which is Bad Boys was actually only made for a smaller budget.
Yep.
I mean, it was a very low budget film to the point where the big explosion at the end of the film, if you watch the documentaries on the DVD, he actually says Bruckheimer wouldn't let him do it because it cost too much. And so he actually paid for it himself. He wrote the check. And said, I want this explosion, out of his director's fee, wrote the check, paid for the explosion, and basically said, if the film is successful, you can pay me back, you know? And it's that lack of money that breeds creativity.
Absolutely.
Sam Raimi has said it many times, where he says, the less money you have, the more creative you get. And it's like, so if he has no money with this next film, then that might actually force him to be more creative.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
It all started going wrong for him. Looking at his filmography, The Rock I really enjoyed.
It went wrong from Pearl Harbor.
Armageddon.
And Armageddon was fun. I just wanted to take this and go, gentlemen, welcome to The Rock. But then Pearl Harbor was where it went wrong, because that was his biggest picture at the time.
Yep.
And it's one of the few movies where I've wandered out to take a break from. And I think I went and saw about 10 minutes of Moulin Rouge and came back and nothing much had happened. And then after that, I mean, Bad Boys 2 has its moments, but it's all Michael Bay.
It's a
bigness at that point.
Look, I think
that
Pearl Harbor was the turning point in his career. If you look at Pearl Harbor, you can shred Pearl Harbor down, keep the 45 minutes of the bombing sequence of Pearl Harbor, which is an amazing, amazing spectacle.
It looks good.
It looks great. But everything on either side of that sequence is a write-off, you know? It's just, once again, it's a film that required drama. It's a film that required emotions and depth, because that's a romance. That's basically what it is. And none of them gave it to us. You know? So all we ended up with was a very spectacular recreation of the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because you look at kind of his history from then on, and it's all about individual scenes, the same as I was saying for Transformers 3. It's like he has these
You just saw that in the chat room too, did you? James from Melbourne says Pearl Harbor or Moulin Rouge? Sounds like the seven circles of hell.
No, I just spotted that he'd done a Lionel Richie video somewhere between Bad Boys 2 and The Island.
I love the title of the song is Do It To Me. Yeah, he would have gone on great with that one. Moving right along.
All right, that's the last of Michael Bay, I promise. All right? That's the last of Michael Bay. Let's have a look at a trailer. This trailer surfaced this week. I saw the normal trailer, and I thought, that actually looks like it could be kind of fun. And then this Red Band trailer came out, and it's actually pretty much solidified that I want to see this film, purely because it's the cast, and the cast, I think, is really good. But the film actually looks quite funny. Now, unfortunately, some of the best stuff in the original trailer has been excised for this new trailer, because they're obviously showing different things. I do suggest that if you do like at all what you're seeing in this trailer, go back and have a look at the other trailer, because there is actually very different stuff in it. The film is called Horrible Bosses, and it's Colin Farrell and
it's a bunch of
Kevin
really good
Spacey
people being
and
really mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's really. It's all about three guys who are so downtrodden by their bosses they want to kill them.
I can relate to this as a horrible boss.
So have a look at this and see what you think of this.
Think I can help you, boys?
Are you a businessman?
Motherfucker Jones.
Your first name is Motherfucker?
My real name is Dean.
Dean Jones. That's the same name of the actor Herbie Lovebone.
Yeah, he's not gonna know who that is.
I know who he is, bitch. I can't walk around this fucking neighborhood with that Disney-ass name.
We each have a boss.
You're my bitch.
Yo, dickwall!
You're gonna give me that dong, Dale.
And it would be best if those bosses maybe weren't
no longer around anymore.
You know?
Killed.
You want one?
Nothing for you?
It's 8:15 in the morning. I'm now an alcoholic.
The only reason I took one because I thought you were going to have one.
So you took one because you thought I was going to have one?
I was just trying to be polite.
So what? If I was going to put my balls in honey and shaved coconut, you'd do that too?
Your dad made the choice to dispose of our chemical waste responsibly.
Bolivian said they'd do it for a third of the price.
No, you can't go to them.
We shouldn't, because they're going to endanger thousands of local residents.
Oh, I give a fuck. Some local tries and gets cancer. Cry me a fucking river.
Julian's gone fucking batshit crazy. She took a bunch of photographs of me.
You did all this while I was unconscious?
Mm-hmm, yep.
You're a raper and you raped me. That's a rape!
Just relax there, Jodie Foster. Your dick wasn't even hard.
That does not give me any relief.
We all have clear motives for killing our bosses.
Why don't you kill each other's bosses?
Right, I'm doing Pellet. You're going to do Harkin, and you're going to get some intel from Julia, right?
See you on the other side.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Y'all motherfuckers crazy.
It was some failure, boss. She makes herself a little snack, a popsicle, a banana, and finally, a hot dog.
What's up with her?
So you took the penis foods as an invitation to fuck her?
No, I took her invitation to fuck her as an invitation to fuck her.
Ow! What are you...
We found a hitman online.
Wait, what's this for?
Wouldn't want to leave a stain now, would we?
Your ad said you do wet work.
I urinate on other men for money. Why else do you think my ad was in the men seeking men section? You fucking idiot.
Could you be dumber?
We are looking for a man!
It reflects poorly on me that you're my friend.
You know what's going on in there?
Yeah, let's just go.
That was almost all over us.
I am literally going to watch that movie because it looks batshit insane.
It does look batshit insane. The last time we saw Kevin Spacey playing a boss this horrendous was in Swimming with Sharks, which I love, Swimming with Sharks.
Now, picture those writers. You've heard all that dialogue.
Yeah.
Those people have been signed on to write... Well, Michael Markowitz, who wrote Horrible Bosses, has been signed on to do Disney's King of the Elves, which is their next animated film, next year. It's slated for 2013 release.
That's amazing.
It's after Wreck-It Ralph. So this is, and it's going to be an adaptation of a Philip K. Dick short story.
Oh man.
He's only
so
fantasy.
There's something for that right now.
Something wrong about all of that that combination of people, though. All right. What else? The reason I brought this up with this particular next news story was because I wanted opinions, because we're all Aronofsky fans. All right.
Right.
What do we think about this new project of his? Apparently, Paramount is near a deal now with Aronofsky to sign for the $100 million project Noah. Aronofsky's going to do Noah's Ark.
Bloody hell.
This apparently is a pet project of his. He's wanted to do it for years. It's a huge, huge budget. Apparently it's going to be a co-production. So what do we think? Are we ready for Noah's Ark?
Yes, hell yeah. Bring on the flood.
Sorry, I just got... I know Steam's open, you're going to hate me for that, but thank you, Zed, who just gifted me a game.
Oh, wow.
Thank you so much, dude. I just thought I'd say that live on air. Okay. Anyway. Noah, this is my thing. I grew up religious background, so on and so forth. The story of Noah is epic.
Absolutely.
And if you
no
get it
there.
Right, I don't care that it's religious. The concept of a dude with a boat full of animals, and Aronofsky's dark as shit, so you know those animals are either going to, I don't know, interbreed or possibly get, you know, some sort of...
Or turn into ballerinas.
I was actually going to say they're all going to get, like, you know, some sort of zombie disease, and Noah's going to have to go around killing them all or something. There has to be something in this that he saw and just went, this could be amazing. Yeah. And if that's the case... Dude, I'm in.
Okay, so according to the latest thing, it says that the script is being rewritten by Gladiator writer John Logan. It's a sprawling fantasy epic and will cost north of $100 million. So Aronofsky's never worked with budgets like this before. So all I can think is, what the hell's he planning? You know, it's not the religious aspect for me. I'm just wondering if the Noah's Ark tale is really kind of what cinema audiences want to see right now.
It's a tough one.
They all stayed... well away, and I know that was a bad film, but they all stayed well away from Evan Almighty.
The problem is when you do Old Testament stuff, you're talking about something that at least three major religions in the world all respect and all have things. You look at going back, 12, 13 years when something, Prince of Egypt came out?
Yep.
It was an animated film.
Yeah.
It was so vanilla because they had to, it was the Moses story. They had to keep that so PC just to please everybody that could possibly be offended by it.
And you know that Aronofsky's not going to want to please anybody.
No, exactly.
No, but this is the thing.
And that's why it could be awesome.
Yeah.
But I doubt any share. Which studio is this? Fox?
Paramount is Fox one of them. Paramount is one of them. Fox is
now, I can't imagine Fox going against their conservative Christian core.
I see it, it's going to fall, it'll fall to Paramount. I'm just putting
Well, no, they're actually saying there's two of them because it's so expensive. The two of them are co-financing it.
Dude, this must be the most epic planned thing ever. I mean, but like,
if they pull it off, it would be awesome. You know,
yeah,
absolutely. You know, I'm
so curious to see what. Like, I mean, okay, Aronofsky's had a while since he's made a movie that I've really thought was bad. Okay, like, yeah. I mean, look, I'll admit the Fountain or whatever it was.
The Fountain was it had its.
It moment. Was all right. It had its moments.
I was not
it wasn't
a huge fan.
Yeah, I know it wasn't a huge fan, but that'd be the closest.
Visually, it's very nice.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's always interesting, even
yeah.
if he doesn't.
Yeah,
exactly. And he's always trying something different. And if he's got this plan, I'm in. I'm in to see it, and I'm in to promote it because
let's
just
trust
like,
him for now and go
exactly.
with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Look,
and
yeah,
when I start seeing that, you know, Megan Fox, and you know,
I have a lot of faith in Aronofsky at the moment, so I'm willing to go with the right. I'm just wondering if this is really the right step for him at this point.
Yeah,
I just don't know if the world wants Noah's Ark right now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, look, the thing is,
out of all the Old Testament stories that could be told, I just don't know if...
Now, he stepped away from Wolverine because he was worried about studio interference. Was that the story?
It was studio interference. It was working in Japan.
Yeah.
There was a few factors involved. And also, I think Noah had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. And look, you know, I mean, I think stepping away from Wolverine was a great move for him.
Although I really wanted to see that film.
So did I. Yeah. But I think a big movie might be the big thing. Because even though Black Swan did really well, box office-wise, ultimately, and it won a whole bunch of Oscars and a bunch of awards generally, and it's, you know, look, undoubtedly, until Tree of Life came along for me, it was still the best film released in Australia this year, because we didn't get it until January this year. Mm. You know, but... Having said that, maybe that was still a small film. You know, it was an arty film when all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
So the next step for him is clearly a big thing, taking it up a notch. Now, Noah's taking up about 4 or 5 notches.
Well, because I don't think he's I don't think he's ever worked with a budget more than $30 million.
I mean, he should be doing Transformers 4 next.
Yeah, so he's basically.
Dude, imagine that?
He's jumping
the
from
stories of all the Transformers.
Wow. And at one point, you know, Optimus Prime turns into a swan. And
what is with you and the swans?
While Bumblebee falls into addiction.
Oh, yeah. Which one of them is masturbating furiously? That's what I want to know.
Whoa. And coolant leaks.
Go and see Black Swan if you haven't seen it, and that joke will make a hell of a lot more sense.
Zed says he feels sorry that he dragged the film show into gaming, and I say, you're forgiven as long as you give me a game. Okay.
Oh, that's so mean.
I'm joking. Nice. I'm joking. No, it's no problem at all. Look, I will give him the benefit of the doubt because he's Aronofsky.
That's really all we can ask.
Yeah,
Dave.
He's done no wrong yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's always interesting. I just when I first heard about this, I just kind of went, Noah's Ark, really? It's like, really? Out of all the things you could have chosen to do, it's like, that's just a very odd choice. He's obviously got something different planned for this. Mm. He's never, if anything, he is not predictable. So.
Maybe it's not even going to be in a boat. Maybe it'll be in space.
Yes.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah. Rework it completely.
Absolutely. Dude, that's amazing. You are the smartest man on Earth. That is incredibly cool.
Push off a ship into space with every last bit of life on Earth.
Dude, I dig it, man. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's send
Even
him
if
in.
He doesn't make that, let's make that movie.
If he doesn't, you and me are going
into we're putting
the
call
business.
Out to the listeners. If we can raise a few $100 million for
this. Of course, we've already got going in the chat room the what's a qubit joke All right, let's while we're talking about space, let's talk about Ridley Scott's Prometheus. And say that Damon Lindelof, who's writing it, has come out with a little bit of information. He hasn't really talked about what it's about, but he has talked a little bit about the origin of it. And he basically said that the original idea was just a straight prequel of Alien, and he pitched an idea because he has a real problem with prequels. And let me just read you a quote from his interview that he did, and he said that he said the Alien franchise at this point had been completely diluted. With Alien versus Predator and everything else. He says, I've always felt that really good prequels should be original movies, and the sequels to those prequels should not be the movie which already exists. Because with all due respect to anyone who makes a prequel, but why would you ruin the greatest twist in the history of cinema, Luke, I am your father, by showing me three movies which basically spoil that surprise? He says, you can do movies which take place before Star Wars, but I don't need to see the story of the Skywalker clan. Show me something else which I can't guess and the possible outcome of. So basically what he's saying is there's no point in doing a straight prequel to Alien because we already know the outcome. So what he said was he pitched an idea which was Prometheus, which takes place in the same world, but it's different characters, it's a different story, and just taking you into a place where you may not know what's coming next. And I think that that gives me a lot of hope.
It's a good direction to start from.
Absolutely.
It's a good mental
now, this
direction
is, this
to
is
have.
One of the guys who was one of the creators of Lost, so you can see that he has he has an idea of what mystery, you know, he likes the concept of mystery and misdirection and so forth. So I just thought it was very interesting. He says that he said that there was a script that he came in and he reworked, and he said that the script is actually only took 2 weeks to write, which I thought was really interesting, because he said they spent like 4 weeks in a meeting room, and he said that it's very cliched to say, but he said that Ridley Scott is a genius and he's a very visual director, and he said that they would sit there, him, the producer, and Ridley Scott, and they would literally just map this film out, and he had all these great visual ideas. So he said when it physically came down to writing it, it didn't take very long to write, because he had source material to work from, and B, Ridley Scott had mapped it out for him already. So I just think it's going to be very interesting to see what Prometheus. The full interview can be read if you go to our show notes. You can find the article there. It is an interesting article to read, because he has some really good ideas. Now, whether you love or hate Lost, Lindelof is a great writer, and it's going to be interesting to see where he takes.
I agree.
This
supposed
non-prequel to the Alien
world.
Dude, so.
It's weird to say this out loud, but I haven't been excited about a project like this in a long time. Like, there's just this internal buzz in me towards this film, like you don't get with many other films, where I'm just like, it's this feeling of returning to what it is. You know what I mean? And I'm just, I'm really, like, it doesn't matter for me even if it fails. It's just to be that excited about something
like
this. Well,
also, I mean, we have to note that by the time this film actually hits cinemas, it will be 30 years on the mark.
Yeah.
Since the last time Ridley Scott directed the science
fiction. No, absolutely.
So it's a very exciting time. So,
So, I just want to get that off my
head. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm there with you. Look,
yeah,
I'm really keen for this. And we have also heard in past rumors that H.R. Giger is involved in it again, so he is bringing back designs. So,
well, look, I imagine for the same reasons. Again, it's the reason I'm so excited is because I get that feeling that the whole team's kind of going, all right, enough of this rubbish. Let's just get back to the core story. And you're just like, yes. You're like, respect, let's do this. But yeah, so I'm excited.
No, I am too. I think it's good. And speaking of other sequels that I could be excited about, hasn't happened yet, but I could be excited. The Rocketeer, Joe Johnson's film from the 80s. In an interview recently where he was talking all about Captain America, and he was talking about how challenging Captain America was.
You are the Rocket Man.
The question came up from Film Journal.
You were promised jetpacks.
From the Film Journal International, question was, are there any other comic book heroes you'd be interested in bringing to the big screen? Joe Johnson replied with, I'd like to make a sequel to The Rocketeer.
Hell yeah.
And I thought, good on you.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
I love The Rocketeer. The Rocketeer is campy, good fun, but it is the genius for Captain America. You have a look at that, and you know what to expect in Captain America.
No, absolutely.
Same director, same style. It's a very interesting interview. He goes on, he talks about how hard it was to do the thin Steve Rogers in Captain America, and he said that it was actually a combination. They had to shoot every scene four times because they had a smaller person, then they had to shoot it with him, then they had to shoot it with the other actors, and basically it was a combination of digital trickery and a technique where they have used a special effects company that specializes in digital plastic surgery.
Right.
And basically the idea was to just shrink Chris Evans into those scenes, but of course it isn't always that easy just to shrink him in down. And they would have to play scenes out where he would be in a ditch or the other actors would be on boxes so that they actually had the right eye lines. And then they would do scenes where he would have markers on his chin or they would have markers on their forehead so they would have, be looking in the right place. He said it was a nightmare, but he said the final results are actually quite staggering. And
look, I mean, we're all kind of aware that it's a bit bobblehead-ish, but you couldn't ask for more than what they've managed
to
do.
From the clips I've seen, it's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty good. Yes, you're right. It's got a little bit of that bobbleheadishness, but I think that's kind of on purpose as well because of the shape of his character. He's kind of this little weedy guy. So I am looking forward to Captain America. I think it's after Transformers, we need Captain America at this point. You know?
Absolutely.
We need it to help restore our faith.
Our faith in America.
let's talk Mission Impossible for a second here. And say that Mission Impossible 4 or Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol got its trailer this week, and we're going to have a look at that in a second. Are we excited about this?
I am.
Yeah, me too.
Look, it's funny because anyone I turn to and just goes, you know, I just don't really care. I mean, the trailer's kind of okay, but I'll just look at them and I'm like, did you see 3? And they're like, oh, no, I just skipped it. It didn't look that good. I'm like, then back off and don't talk about it. Because it's like, realistically, if you haven't seen 3... you don't realize that it actually wasn't that bad.
No, 3
like,
was actually damn
everybody
good.
Everybody just skipped it, man. Yeah, it was just like
that's because they've been burned by Part 2. Yeah. Part 2 was a weak-ass film.
It was.
And it really pains me to say that because I'm a big John Woo fan, but he really screwed the pooch with Part 2. It was not a good film.
I think he just lost his way with that film. You look at it and go, what were you trying to do?
And it has moments. It has some good stuff in it. Some you look at it and go, there's a John Woo moment, there's a John Woo moment. But the film doesn't work. Whereas I really
stop with the doves. Enough.
I was a big fan of the first Mission Impossible. I really enjoyed it. And I was a huge fan of what J.J. Abrams did with it. I thought Mission Impossible 3 was a damn good film.
And you know what I think is really cool about the Mission Impossible series? The spy genre is not done enough,
first of all.
I mean, outside the James Bond films, outside the odd, outside the Bourne films, which were great, of course. You know, the Mission Impossible series, you've seen them evolve, with the exception of the second one, with the times. And the first one, what, 96-ish, was, you know, very much the blockbuster film of the mid-90s. And it was cool. It had the sort of cast. I think Emilia Estefez was in it.
Yeah.
You know, and it had that sort of cast that you wouldn't have expected, but you kind of look back at it now and go, yeah, that was great. And it had all those iconic scenes in it. We love it, you know. And it had that great soundtrack on it, which... is a point we'll bring back after watching the trailer.
Would you mean this one?
Yeah, I would mean this one.
Now, this is actually a very interesting point about the soundtrack, because this is actually Danny Elfman's reworking of Lalo Schifrin's original score. And I loved what Danny Elfman did with the score. I thought he did a fantastic job just reworking Lalo Schifrin's music. And that's the one thing I loved about Part 3, was Part 3 even brought back even more of those original Lalo Schifrin themes into the fold. And I just think that Part 2 completely ignored all of that. they kind of went off and... that, what is it? Hans Zimmer, I think, did the music for Part 2. Hans. And it just it didn't work. And now with this latest one, I have a problem with the music.
Yeah.
And that's only a trailer. Granted, it's only a trailer. All right? And trailers are cut by completely separate people.
They're their own
forth.
Films, yeah.
But if you're going to sell a Mission Impossible movie... you kick that music in. Absolutely. You know, that's the music. And if you watch the trailer for Part 3, it used that music.
But,
you
like,
know?
Dave, I actually counter with, I think that music has kind of almost tainted people's opinions.
Not for a film called Mission Impossible.
No, because, dude, 2 was a wreck. And a lot of people didn't see 3 based entirely on that 2 was just awful. Like, just unbearable. So maybe they're trying to... And again, these are all speculations, but maybe they're trying to win over some of the audience that may... associate that music with 2?
Well, they can't associate with 2 because it wasn't used in 2. That's the problem.
Well, kind of it was, just not very well. And I think it was scored by Fred Durst, so let's not be proud of that. There was actually the theme wasn't too. It just was terrible.
Yeah, but it was so overworked. It didn't sound like the theme anymore. Yeah. That was the problem. I'm just going to have a quick look here because I'm very curious. Mission Impossible 3. We talk about the fact that nobody went to see it, right?
I didn't mean
No. But we talk about that. But we should point 35. Out that that out of a $150 million budget, it did make $397 million around the world. So, mildly, somebody saw it. somebody actually did see it. Those stats are coming to us from Box Office Mojo. But yes, so somebody did see the second one. The third one. And in fact, they must have seen it because they gave J.J. Abrams Star Trek after that.
We can be forever grateful.
Exactly.
I also think it's amazing to note that Mission Impossible 3 was a directorial debut.
Yeah.
Because J.J. Abrams had directed television, but this was his theatrical debut. Mm-hmm. This is the first feature film he'd ever directed. And what a debut.
Yeah.
Now, I think we should also point out that Mission Impossible 4, or Ghost Protocol as it's called, is a live-action debut. Because Brad Bird has directed it, and produced by J.J. Abrams again, but it's directed by Brad Bird, and this is his first live-action film. Without further ado, let's have a look at this trailer real quick, and let's see what people at home think of this.
An hour ago, a bomb blew up the Kremlin. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed. Now I've been ordered to take you to Washington, where they will hang the Kremlin bombing on you and your team, unless you were to escape after assaulting Brandt and me. But if any one of your team is caught, they will be branded terrorists out to incite global nuclear war.
So what happens now?
Your mission, should you choose to accept it,
so what's the play?
Who are you really, Brandt?
We all have our secrets. Don't we, Ethan?
Okay, now remember, blue is glue.
And when it's red?
Dead.
You're not gonna make it!
You're not helping.
Aside from the fact that I think they should have had the Mission Impossible theme in there instead of Eminem, it's a badass trailer.
Hell yeah. Yep.
And for those who are saying, oh man, it's Tom Cruise again, this is supposed to be the handoff film.
Yeah.
So theoretically, in future Mission Impossible films, Jeremy Renner will be the star.
Cool. And you know what? Any film with Jeremy Renner is a win so far. I haven't seen a single film that guy.
And he's also taking over the other big franchise because Jeremy Renner's been cast in the Bourne films. Ah. So in the new Bourne films,
there was
a lot of Bourne in that.
Sorry,
there's a lot of Bourne. I think we've had a couple of Bourne films since the last Mission Impossible.
We had one more since then. Yeah.
And then that kind of really brutal close quarters fighting and all that sort of stuff. That's made its way into the series. Mm. And you need that now.
Yeah. It also made its way into James Bond. That was the whole thing with
People expect
Casino Royale and everything. Yeah. They adopted the Bourne style. Yeah. All right. Okay, I can't wait for that. As I say, I just want to see the trailer cut with. I just felt like that music was the biggest cock tease of all time because it kind of goes dun dun.
It's the first trailer, man.
Dun dun. It's like They'll just play it.
The next trailer is just going to be wall to wall theme music.
I hope so.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. This one's like the tease. It's like it's almost like the teaser, but there's been a teaser. But this is like the teaser after the teaser. This is like the cock
tease. More teaser.
All right, we got to move on. We're running way late. Funny that we never were late. Very quickly, Disney has way now late. Confirmed that 2013 will be Thor 2. Interestingly enough, Chris Hemsworth is coming back as Thor, but Kenneth Branagh is not.
Yes, he's not coming back as Thor.
No, he's not coming back as a director. So I just thought... I've
got a soft spot for Thor.
Sorry, I found that funny for a reason I can't tell you.
Should we point out that soft spot for Thor that we all met at
Thor
Junket?
That's true.
So, yeah. Well, except you two didn't, but I met you two.
That's where the man love started.
It is. It's right here.
There's a lot of love in this room.
That's when
right
the wolf pack...
Don't you start.
Don't call it a callback.
All right, so that's that. We also have 2013 at this point is going to be Iron Man 3 and Thor 2. That's the lineup. And you notice it's Disney that confirms it, which means they're taking it over.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we knew that tonight, we knew that date was coming.
G4, that's swell.
I thought of you immediately, Richard, when I saw this, and I thought, oh, we really need this service here in Australia.
Yeah.
And you and I, in particular, I think with the obsession with how many movies we go to, Josh, I don't know, would get as much value out of it. You would definitely like
here
it.
Here we go.
But $50 a month, movie pass.
Yep.
See as many movies as you want.
For Netflix.
No, this is a new thing coming. They're calling it the Netflix of theaters. Basically, you pay for your movie pass, and you just get as many movies as you want at the cinema, $50 a month.
That is incredible.
I want that.
Yeah.
What do you mean I wouldn't get in on that? No. Are you for real? That's like...
It would take away game time, dude. You'd be at the cinema every day.
Will it be like a gym membership where you get revved up at the start of the year and go, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm plonking down my $600. I'm going to get back to the gym and you go once and think, I hate this place.
It's the movies, dude.
I know, it's the movies. It's less effort than the gym.
Seriously, I would just like, no, dude, because the same, I would do that instead of going and getting a DVD out. I would just wander down the road to the Ritz or wherever they're going to let it go. And I'd just be like, hey, Jeff, hey, Mike, you know, knowing everyone in the thing. Rock up, sit down, watch a movie, and then just leave pissed
off.
And be like, why do I pay for this shit? All the movies are so bad.
Apparently it says it's $50 a month. You pay an additional $3 US if you want to see IMAX or 3D.
That's fair. I can deal with that.
I can even deal with that. That's only an extra $3 on top. This is an amazing deal. I can't see theater exhibitors actually wanting to do this.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how this works.
I'm curious.
Is it going to be that they... they tend to make a lot of their money off concession stands anyway.
So well, that's true.
You know, they're assuming that if the tickets aren't their biggest revenue raiser, then maybe we should just...
It does also say here, it says, editor's note, this is Gizmodo that had this article. It says, editor's note, what if this was in Australia? Would it drag us away from Channel BitTorrent?
Well, I think, you know, what will drag us away from Channel BitTorrent is getting...
Getting
movies on time in the cinemas and getting the movies that everyone's seeing on time. I mean, we still don't see half the art house stuff or half the foreign language films that come out, even in the States, where the market's still not that big for foreign language films. We don't get half the stuff that they get.
Yeah, but let's take it to the slightly more obvious factor, though.
Yeah.
We also wouldn't get... We also have problems in this country with things like, let's just face Green Lantern for a second.
Yeah.
I say Green Lantern came out in the States, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, but it's just been announced this week that they've got Ryan Reynolds coming out, and this was always the rumor. We're getting it late touring.
But with the reviews that this film has had,
it's
who
killed
cares?
It. Absolutely.
You know, and that's the problem is, who cares at this point? Yes, Ryan Reynolds might be coming out for a junket.
He is coming out for a junket,
but who cares? The film has already been lambasted and roasted. You know, and so I
want to make sweet love to that man.
I do.
As soon as that film,
we'll do it.
Yeah,
we'll report back mid August.
We'll let you know
as long as
like.
You bring video. Okay, we want video.
Really? All right then. Anyway,
that could be
chat room. Don't you guys want to see videos of these two making sweet love to Ryan Reynolds?
James from Melbourne.
That
says
is
sweet
something
love.
Between me and him, and possibly my girlfriend, who may actually have some problem with that. But essentially, it's between me and him.
Well, James from Melbourne says sweet love, not furious.
Freak says it would take massive, massive
incentives. He seems like a cuddler. What can I say?
Freak says it would take massive, massive incentives for me to stop using BitTorrent. Okay, the massive, massive incentives might be jail time?
Yeah. Wait, we're speaking about Furious Love with a Man. That'd keep me away from illegally downloading films.
Yeah.
All right.
That would totally throw off an interview if he actually saw that clip of us talking about it. He'd be like, so you want to make Furious Love to Me? And I'd be like, so funny about that.
So those rings, tell us about them. Okay, last
if there's
piece.
A will, there's a way.
And there we go.
And with that, let's talk about our last piece of film news, because we've got to get onto our lists because we're running late. Last piece of film news was... there's no secret here that I did not like Cars 2 in any way, shape, or
You've
form.
You've said it once or twice.
Just once or twice. I thought Cars 2 was a really, really big disappointment.
Mm. Why do they have doors? Just putting it out there quickly. Just why do they have doors?
Why do they have a ladies' and a men's room?
Yeah, exactly. I don't care. I'd like to imagine, I just want to put this out there, there was some sort of point. We haven't seen the movie Rise of the Planet of the Cars, where the cars sort of rose up and overthrew their human oppressors in a bloodbath. You know, unparalleled.
Oh, right.
You know, and that's what we haven't seen. And the cars evolved from that point. They still kept their doors.
And the concept of houses and stuff as well. I mean, there's houses and buildings. And,
what happened to the motorcycles? Where have they
Good
gone?
Point.
They were actually on the human size during the uprising. That's what happened to them.
Okay. Yeah. There's a couple of people online. I'm sorry if I'm stealing your quote here because I've forgotten who actually said this. But somebody mentioned the fact that why on earth would cars make lemons in the first place? If cars are making themselves, why create lemons?
That's true.
That's all I mean. Just wanted to get that off my chest because I was listening to your show.
That's been holding that in.
I listened to your show last week and that was on the tip of my tongue the whole time. So
yeah,
just,
Cars 2, not a big fan.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks, now that we've got that out of the way, all right. Pixar has released the first teaser for their next film. And all I can say is, thank God.
Yeah.
And all I can say is now this looks like Pixar that we've come to love. This is a new film coming out called Brave, and it's actually a fantasy epic, and it looks fantastic. So it's really short. Here's the first teaser for Brave.
The ancients spoke of it. It is the heart of this fierce land. It is carried in the wind. Born of our legends. And when we are put to the test, it is the one thing we must always be.
That
just looks fucking amazing.
That is freaking awesome.
I want that movie to wash the taste of cars from my brain.
Yeah, I can't wait till next year, quite frankly. I just want that.
That's been kicking around for a while, actually.
Yeah. And it looks like it's taken them a while to do this. And I'm glad they're taking their time on it because it looks fantastic.
Disney has sort of gone into overdrive with this because this year, this week they announced that, and I mentioned this before, King of the Elves, which was on the shelf for ages.
Mm.
I was coming back. Pixar were meant to do another film at one point called Newt.
Yeah, we talked about it. They dropped it.
They dropped it because apparently the storyline was too close to Rio.
Oh.
That was one of the reasons. But back in the early days of DreamWorks, there was this kind of tit for tat. There'd be an ant. There'd be a bug movie and an ant movie. Mm. There'd be a monsters movie and a and Shrek came out. Mm. There was Finding Nemo and Shark's Tale. There's all that kind of tit for tat. They've both gone their separate ways now and done their own. Well, they're both doing sequels now. Let's face it. But when this was announced back in 2008, I think, and I was really excited about it then, and that all the films that they announced then are starting to come out again. King of the Elves, I'm really excited about too. So you might want to talk about that in the future. That's got Chris Williams, who did Bolt,
Bolt.
But look, I think Disney as an animation house is coming back from going from strength to strength. They're trying
Tangled was a lot of fun. I really like Tangled.
They want to reclaim that throne, and
they got a lot of distance together to travel, because DreamWorks and Pixar are both well ahead of Disney at this point.
Well, Disney's strategy there was to buy Pixar.
but that was also a Toy Story issue, because they wanted Toy Story 3, Pixar didn't. And then they said, well, we own it, so we'll go ahead and do it anyway. And Pixar said,
Well, the first thing Lasseter did when he took over animation was shut down the existing Toy Story 3 and
retool
it.
And say, okay, Pixar's back on it, you know? Yeah. All I can say is, as long as they keep Pixar separated from Disney, because Pixar has always proven to be the best judge of what they do, until Cars 2.
Yeah.
Cars 2 is a Lasseter wet dream, and it was he should not be directing now. He's too busy. He's not focused.
And that's the problem, but the first film wasn't great either, because it was a Lasseter vanity project. Mm-hmm. He likes cars, therefore I should have a whole movie about the thing I like. Mm. A bit like Michael Bay.
I like that analogy. I like that analogy, though. I really agree with that. No, that's very true. It's like, it's a project of his own, and it doesn't have the standard Pixar love, because he's not. It's his project. It's not a Pixar project.
Exactly.
And I agree with that so much.
The thing with Cars 2, it works marginally better, I think, but only because they try and make it a Pixar film by giving it this spy story over the top of it. But the Cars world doesn't fit into that world in any way, shape, or form. So it was a misfire from the start.
Yeah.
It was a lemon.
And also, and funnily enough, the one thing that Pixar has always been incredibly strong on is story. Mm. Story has always been king. And the story is not compelling in any way, shape, or form. It's like, what happened to those story meetings? It's like nobody was actually paying any attention to it. Yeah. It was just
they're coming out too quickly, because there was a time when there'd be a few years between a Pixar film. And now they have to have one out.
Pixar's been doing one film a year, though, for the last 4 years, five years. And we got Up and WALL-E and, you know, it's like, and Toy Story 3.
Absolutely.
Because these films aren't just a year apart. They are actually in development long before that. Yeah, I mean, these films are taking a couple of years to do.
But do you worry that there's all these sequels coming out? Because we've had Toy Story 3 might be the exception that proves the rule, but we've just had Cars 2, which wasn't great. We've just had we're going to have Monsters University, which is going to be a prequel to one of my favorite Pixar films, Monsters. Yeah. And there might be another, but then they're going back to original films with Brave.
So what is their schedule at this point? The next one is Brave.
Yeah,
Rick's Brave, and then I think it's
Monsters University.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
I'll double check that while we're talking. But
So as long as we get Brave soon and next, we have to watch the look. But I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt because Toy Story 3 was a phenomenal effort. Right, and you look at it and go, that is just an amazing film. To do a part three and to make it so fresh, so alive, so and everything else that film was, and so emotional, that I'm going to give Monsters University the benefit of the doubt at this point. Pixar doesn't do, with the exception of Toy Story, hasn't done sequels until Cars 2 abomination.
Yeah.
You know, and so I kind of hope that
I also think that, look, I mean, I think Cars 1 felt the same way for me as Cars 2 does now, where it's just like
flawed idea.
Yeah, no, and it was just so meh that I'm happy to just wait for the next film, because it's like Cars 2's done, fine, he got it out of his system, now let's get back to doing Pixar. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think
he can go back to running Disney and let the Pixar people do what Pixar do. Mm. I mean, it's really, somebody's pointing out the Cars 2. James from Melbourne in our chat room says Cars 2 was better than the Toy Story cartoon at the start. I have to actually
disagree.
Yeah. I think Cars 2 is far worse, but I have to say, even that Toy Story short felt
it wasn't
flat.
And I think, you know, the reason why the Toy Story short fell flat was that we put a nice cap on Toy Story.
We
at
didn't
the end
need
of Toy
it.
Story. No. But I suspect there's going to be a lot more of those, because it was called Toy Story. The full title was Toy Story Toons, Hawaiian Vacation.
Yeah.
I expect there'll be a running series. I think, you know, we may not see another, except for there's one coming out called
Isn't
La Luna.
Isn't it ironic that it's called Hawaiian Vacation? Because it's just like, isn't that exact concept just so incredibly sellout-ish?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that just like, this is the stuff we used to make fun of in The Simpsons with The Simpsons Hawaiian do Carissa or whatever the fuck that kind of music is. And it's just like, you're just like, dude, were you doing that intentionally, or was this actually
and
what you
And the thing that really frustrates me is that the Pixar shorts are brilliant. They have always been these really clever little shorts at the beginnings of their films. And
This felt like they were like, shit, we don't have anything
and,
through the song.
They're things that people graduate from and make big films. Like the guy that's directing Mark Andrews, who's doing Brave, did a short, I just quickly looked it up, called One Man Band, which
actually, I love One Man Band,
which was on the front of Cars, Asia Connection, when that came back out in 2005.
Well,
and
it's like the guy who directed, favorite. The guy who directed, give me a second, he directed, I think it was Monsters Incorporated, or it was Wall-E. It could have been one of those two. He directed the one with the birds on the power line, which is just genius, you know?
And cute and funny and everything that is Pixar. Yeah, agreed.
Well, the next one they've got coming out, they've actually, Pixar have just released this week as well, a little bit of footage from a short film called La Luna, which looks beautiful. It's back to that Pixar magic. Oh, I don't know what it's going to be on the front of.
Might be in front of Brave.
It might be in front of Brave, but it looks stunning. And it looks like the kind of thing. Remember when we were blown away by Night and Day at the start of Toy Story 3? It looks like we're going to be blown away again.
Wonderful.
So. Good. So that's what we want. All right, let's go into our list of five. Let's kick through this fairly fast, guys, because we're running way over today. What are we looking at the moment? Where are we? We're sitting at. See, we're already an hour 43. All right, let's do the list of five fast.
An hour and 43 minutes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, so list of five this week is five investigative films, whether it be a lawyer, a cop, a journalist, whatever, films where clues have to be followed and truth revealed to uncover the mystery. Investigative movies are always fun and engrossing. Let's list five of them, and this is, of course, a listener-requested list from last week. So let's do this. Who wants to start us off?
You
want to start?
No, I was going to do it. And it has to. I can't start in the middle.
Okay, Angel Heart.
Very nice choice.
It's a little bit higher in line.
Oh, good. Well, we'll come back to it. Do you want to save? You're talking about Angel Heart.
Yep, we'll save it.
And when Josh gets to his, we can discuss it. Not on my list, but I think it's a great film. I actually forgot about Angel Heart. Okay, so your number five, Josh.
My number five is. A film that I did, it's kind of just outside the line of what we were talking about, but I actually think it is because technically it follows the same kind of a thing, and I actually just thought about it on the end of the thing, which is Seven.
I actually thought about Seven. It almost made my list.
And look, I mean, as you know, the huge, incredible Fincher fan that I am, I couldn't.
Yeah, and I think Seven is a great choice. Cool. It's about them trying to uncover who's doing these things, of course.
Yeah.
Fantastic. My number five is a 1981 film, Absence of Malice. Sally Field and Paul Newman, all about basically a journalist trying to uncover what is going on with this Wharfside ringleader and so forth, and whether he may not actually be as guilty as everybody is accusing him of. It's a good film. Very good film. Your number four?
Was The Long Goodbye.
I haven't seen it.
1973, Robert Altman.
I know the film. I haven't seen
and
it.
And it's, I think I see, I mention a Robert Altman film every time I'm here. And it's great.
Elliot Gould's in it.
It was set and based in the 1970s. It's very much a 1970s film, but it's based on a 1950s Raymond Chandler.
Yep.
And it sort of plays on the differences between those two decades quite well. In that sort of anachronistic way, Elliot Gould's character is a very anachronistic sort of character. He's got this.
I love Elliot.
There's a running gag about his cat in there, which is fabulous. There's this internal monologue, and you know that 1950s kind of voiceover. It was a dark and stormy night, blah blah blah. And he does that, but then it's half in his head, and then the end of the sentence will come out of his mouth in the dialogue, and it'll go back to his head.
Oh wow, that's and really so
it's
kind cool.
Of, it's this really fluid thing, and it's just a really clever film, and it's kind of got this sort of. There's a character in there who's a little bit like Ernest Hemingway, so it's quite cool.
I've got to get around to seeing it. I've never seen it for some reason. I don't know why. Josh, your number four.
My number four is Blade Runner, which film. Is just... It was one of those, you know how you have those cliche ones? You have those cliche ones that you're like, I should just get rid of that and get something else. And then you're like, no, look, that deserves to be where it is. It's like it is an incredibly good story.
I actually pondered Blade Runner, but I figured it was going to be on somebody's list.
It's number two on mine.
well, I'll come back to that one later.
All right, my number four is Capricorn 1. Speaking of Elliot Gould.
No, I keep wanting to watch that.
1978, about basically Elliot Gould trying to I think it will be a vaulted pretty soon. Trying to uncover the faked Mars mission. It's a great film. Really good. Peter Hyams film. A lot of fun.
All right.
Your number three.
Oh, look, given my history here, The Hangover.
That's just a very good choice. It didn't even occur to me.
It works under the pretense, man.
Yeah. Yep. That didn't even occur to me, but yeah, that would work. That would work indeed. I like The Hangover a lot.
But not The Hangover Part 2.
No. Although, it's the same films. So you could just do it again. Okay, number three, Josh.
My number three is Angel Heart.
All right, there you go. Double back.
All right, Angel Heart was shown to me recently. It was suggested by a good friend of ours, Cullen Wilson Austin. No, no, Colin Wilson was the first guy to give that one to me. In fact, he was the one that went buy this right now and actually put the Blu-ray in my hand. So I sat down and watched, and I agree with Dave on the fact that I think the ending is a bit odd.
Just the last 2 minutes.
But the rest of the film is just brilliant.
Absolutely.
It's just so good. It's so well planned out. It's
not even the resolution of the film. The resolution I can even accept. It's just the handling of the resolution. Yeah. It's that tacky effect that's been put onto it, and it cheapens what is a fantastic film.
And everything else about the film, though, is mesmerizing.
It was
back
when Mickey Rourke had his original face, too.
It was, and he was a handsome boy.
Yeah. All right.
Got
Dave.
A thing about chickens. Yeah. Okay, so my number three is Primal Fear, the 1996 Richard Gere film. Great little voyage of discovery about who is this guy and what has he really done? What has he really done? And to say any more really spoils the film. Just watch.
Mm. Yeah.
Just
but
watch.
Don't read any of the sequel books because they're all crap.
I didn't even know there were sequel books.
He just got carried away. The guy just wrote about four or five of them, and the main villain just gets increasingly stupid.
Once you've made
on.
The reveal, though, I don't see how it would be interesting.
And that's how all the rest of them, it's like post the reveal, the villain's out there, and it's just him doing increasingly bad things to the point where he's like, I think in one of them he's got like holds a whole town captive or something.
Wow.
So it's, yeah.
Freaky.
Oh, somebody's mic is clicking.
Is it me?
No, I don't know whose it is. So just check your joints. Oh. I think it is you, Richard.
What do I have to
do? Just push in. There. That's it. It is you. There you go.
Okay. Done?
Okay.
Cool. All right.
Good.
Fixed.
All right. Who are we up to?
That was
back
you
to me.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Yep.
So
number two
is Blade Runner.
Yeah.
There you go.
Great film.
Blade Runner. There's just so much you can say about it. It's a great story. It's a great detective story. It's a brilliant world. It's just, we've done it to death.
But which cut?
I think Blade Runner is going to get vaulted pretty soon.
Always final for me.
Absolutely.
It's just like, I've seen the rest, and I will be honest. Even as a kid watching it, I'm like, the world's amazing. The thing is, it's just not finished.
And if you don't have it on Blu-ray, get it now.
Yeah, I think there are only three films where I'll say that the altered version or the amended versions are actually better than the original, and two of them are Ridley Scott films.
Nice. Yeah.
Because there's the final director's cut of Close Encounters by Spielberg is by far the version you want to see. There is Kingdom of Heaven, which the director's cut is actually a watchable, really good film.
And actually a decent film.
And a decent film, whereas
ridiculous.
The theatrical cut is really disappointing.
Yeah.
And it just shows you that an extra 15, 20 minutes makes the difference in that film.
I was just so surprised.
Completely
by
different
Heaven.
Film.
Like, I just actually went, wow, that was fucking good.
Well, you could tell heaps was cut out.
I watched it on video and like on DVD, and I was just like, wow, I don't know why I missed that. That was actually incredible. Yeah. And then I found out about the thing, and I was like, oh, well, there you go. That's probably why the difference.
And the third, of course, is Blade Runner. And Blade Runner is an infinitely better film by the fixes, you know?
Cool.
And so you sit there and go, we always bag out that they shouldn't go back and fix films, and then we praise Blade Runner. But there are a few exceptions to that rule, and those three always come to mind as being films that are made better by being fixed, you know? All right, so you did number two?
No, that's me now.
You're number two now.
My number two is Brazil,
nice.
Which is just
interesting choice. It didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, I know, and it's like if you actually sit down, because it's one of those films that you just get lost in what is an epic journey of just craziness. But essentially the storyline is that there is a screw-up in a culture that never screws up.
Yeah.
And the character is out to find out how it happened and why it happened. And during this, he gets lost in the rest of what is the world. But essentially he is trying to fight through this world of bureaucracy to find out what's happened. And it's like it's a world that's set up not to allow things to go wrong. And so finding out what went wrong becomes an absolutely epic journey. And for that, I think it's one of the best investigatory.
No, I think it's fantastic.
Ever.
As I say, would never have occurred to me for this list. And now you mention it, it's like, it actually fits. It actually fits it very well.
And another film where the later release director's cut is better than the
True. That's like, that's not different because they didn't actually alter it.
No, it was just
the original
was the altered, butchered.
That's
version.
Right. That's right. They cut it for the original release. Mm-hmm. It's a slightly different situation. All right, my number two is Silence of the Lambs. 1991 film, which of course is Jodie Foster trying to find out who is the killer and everything. Great film, and it's still one of my
And interesting because it's one of those few films where a side character tears a hole in a film and we all remember him more than we do.
Well, that's right. We always remember Hannibal Lecter, and he's not the bad guy.
In some ways, he's the good guy.
Yeah. He puts the lotion in the bath.
Put the lotion in the basket.
It's a fantastic film. Really, really liked Silence of the Lambs. And it holds up over time. It really has held up well. Number one for you, Richard.
Can I just preface this by saying I wanted to put every Alfred Hitchcock film in this list. I also briefly considered something from David Lynch because all of his films are basically mysteries as well.
Blue Velvet would definitely fit into this list.
The first film I thought of when I went to add onto this list was Vertigo, and I didn't include that on here because I wanted to include another film. And there's, you know, early Hitchcock films like The Lodger or Psycho, they've all got great things. All very worthy of this list. I included Rear Window because I love it to death.
I think, great film.
It's a film that gets better every time.
I showed my girlfriend that only recently, and just rewatching it, I just adore that film. There's just so much to like about it, and it's told in this manner that just any other director would have screwed up. We've seen that.
Disturbia.
Yeah. but anyway, you watch it and you're just like, you are spellbound by this guy's journey, and you all of a sudden, you become that closet guy looking through the window playing this voyeuristic game, and it's like, only Hitchcock could have made that work.
Why not Shatch Jemmy again?
It is.
No, great choice. Rear Window is fabulous. Number one, Josh.
My number one is a film which you and me have talked about a lot. It was one of the first films that I think I suggested to you, and we watched together, and we ended up doing a show on it, which is Brick.
Fantastic.
It's just one of those ones that just came out of nowhere, and it's been called pretentious. It's been called all sorts of horrible words, but I just actually believe it's an amazing story.
Now, pretentious is not a word I would associate.
And it's one of those films that I just sit there, and it's like Brick just told the noir story perfectly.
Well, speaking of Raymond Chandler, we're right back to that territory.
You sort of got that sort of like dialogue you don't necessarily understand, a lot like the 1950s lingo, where it's sort of like they speak so fast and they're all on point with these words that are shortened versions, and it's like you go through it and it's infinitely rewarding to watch it again and again and again.
I love Brick. I actually bought a copy of it on DVD.
Yeah.
I think it's terrific.
I own that too.
You've seen Brick.
I've seen Brick, yeah.
You a fan?
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent stuff. My number one is probably one of the great mysteries of all time.
And I left it off because I was like, nah, everyone knows
Citizen
that
Kane
one.
From 1941. The film is
I don't
all
know this film.
I mean, how can you have a list like this and not include Rosebud? You know? It's like, I mean, this is the entire film is about digging through his life and finding out his
Tell everybody what Rosebud is.
No, I won't. Although I think everybody in the world probably knows what Rosebud is. But the film starts with that mysterious him uttering those words, and then it's about trying to find out what were his last words
about. It's a teddy bear.
If that doesn't, then it's Family Guy taking the piss out of it, told the rest of the world, where it's just got that bit where it's showing just the globe falling off and all that sort of stuff, and that just cuts to Peter going, it's a sled from when he was a kid. There, I just saved you two long boobless hours.
And it's so funny because when we were making this list, the first film I thought of course was Citizen Kane, and my wife just shrugged. My wife is one of those people who doesn't like Citizen Kane. She doesn't understand what the world sees in that film.
Yeah.
She goes, it's so boring. Yeah. And it's like, are you nuts? We need to divorce.
No, you really don't. There's only a few people on Earth that can deal with you. Oh, Soylent Green is actually a really good choice
as well.
And
12 Angry Men as well.
I did ponder 12 Angry Men because I watched it just the other night. It was actually on Foxtel. And I thought, that is another one. But I think I actually brought it up not long ago on a list. It's a list that we could go on forever and ever. There are so many films that could fit into this category. It is a great category to play with, and we'll probably revisit this list at some stage in the future because it's something you always come back to. But we have to move on today, unfortunately. Yes, we have to move on today. The show is very long. We're going to finish up. We're going to say agree or disagree with anything we have to say. Send your email to feedback@filmactually.com or drop us a voicemail, 02801131167. Or if you're outside of Australia, or outside of Sydney, in fact, or you're cheap, you can use our Skype ID, Geek Actually. Get our merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Tumblr accounts, basically any of that sort of stuff, go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link. You can do it right there. Make sure if you want to listen to our tech or general geekery podcast, you can do that by looking for Geek Actually. And remember, if you are a Stitcher Radio user on your mobile device, both of our shows are on Stitcher, and you can find us there as well. Watch us record this show live every Saturday starting around the 12 p.m. ish mark. We record Geek Actually, followed by the Film Actually Show, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10, from about 12 p.m. every Saturday. Geekactually.com/live is where you find that. Richard,
yes.
Tell us where we can find more of your fantastic work on the net.
Well, I don't know how fantastic it is, but you can find me on the net in a couple of different places. I'm on Twitter at dbdbits. I have therealbits.com, which is that's R-E-E-L bits.com, which is all the latest cinema reviews and news, and also DVD bits for when it gets to the other end of the film cycle when it's released on DVD and Blu-ray.
Sounds like a digestive system.
Yes. Yeah, DVD bits, we shit out the film.
The other end of the equation. And Josh, where can people find out more of you on the internet?
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Go over there and check it out. We have a bunch of new content jumping up. We have all sorts of really, really neat stuff with Studio 33 coming up. There's a bunch of new episodes coming up for that. And then we also have the general shows, which go at 8 p.m. on Tuesday nights.
Fantastic. Now we're going to take a deep breath here. Here we go. Charlie and Brad are back. Go find them at reboundradio.com. They have their new podcast now running called Good Day, Sir. WeekendRonan.com is the home for the real junkies, R-E-E-L, junkies. They're a podcast like us, but they like to drink tequila, and they're a lot of fun. Check out Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, Thursdays on Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM, or if you miss them live, you can catch them up on RadioFremantle.com. There you go. Just some of our friends. Sorry, we're in a bit of a rush today, so I'm just flying through them. I also want to just throw out a quick thank you to our friend Josh Spencer, who did our wonderful cartoon artwork for our website and our cover art. You can find more of his work at attackninja.blogspot.com. Now, we are finishing the show today with a track of Steve Jablonski's. It's kind of obvious, but we're not finishing with a track from Dark of the Moon because I haven't managed to get my hands on the soundtrack yet. But all the music is basically a rehash of itself, so we thought we'd just dig it straight back and take a track called Arrival on Earth, I believe it is. Arrival to Earth from the original Transformers score. So that's what we're going to finish with today. I don't think I've got anything more. Have you got anything more?
I'm done.
You're done. Are you spent?
I'm definitely done.
All right. I want to say thank you to our chat room for hanging out with us for the day. You guys have been wonderful. Thank you to everybody out there. I want to say, quite frankly, thank you to Paramount
for
getting us into Transformers.
As well, absolutely. Just because he just doesn't get enough credit anymore.
Who does?
I was just playing around with the God thing again, you know.
God?
You know, everyone does that, like with the whole thing. It's like, I'd like to thank God, I'd like to thank my mom and dad.
Everyone does that when they win, but it's like, no one does it when they lose. It's like, hey, champ, what do you think happened? Well, I was going really well until the third round.
And then God smited me.
Jesus made me lose. He was taunting me from the crowd.
We just got
sounds like a Family Guy skit.
And I think we probably just picked up a one-star review from someone for making fun of God. All right. Thank you very much for everybody. James says, Josh has gone religious. No, he hasn't really. all right. With nothing else to say, I'm going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, apparently in Tree of Life.
All of them.
And we will...
Everything you've ever wondered.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.